lit, to be honest.
How about everyone else's lights? Mic's on. Okay.
Yep.
Let's see
what we cough into them together and see what happens.
It is January 8th, 2009, and the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission meeting will now come to order. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Christensen.
Here.
Commissioner Wyatt.
Here.
Commissioner Melskow.
Here.
Commissioner White.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Christie.
Here. Will everyone please stand for the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, the first item on our agenda is public comment. This is the opportunity for anyone in the room to address the Planning Commission on any item that is not on the Planning Commission's agenda today. Speaker slips are on the back wall, and I have two speaker slips so far this morning, and the first is Eric Greening.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening, and I'd like to welcome you all, and particularly the two new commissioners. Some of you may know I already have concerns with the issue I'm about to speak about. Two of you are about to hear them. There is going to be a strategic planning session by the Board of Supervisors on the 20th, Inauguration Day, and I believe their afternoon session, if I'm not mistaken, will be on prioritizing various items that could be in front of the Planning Department. And I would hope that either individually or by sending a delegation, you would do everything you could to encourage them to move a reexamination of ag policies 22 and 23 to the front of the queue. Those are the ag cluster policies. They were created with an intention or an apparent intent. Now, all three of you that were here on the commission that reviewed that were instrumental in the findings for denial that got overturned. Some of the problems with that project were just inherent with the horrible process that was used on the board level, but many of the problems were problems that seemed to be accumulating around ag clusters in general as they are being practiced. And if we thought that the Santa Margarita Ranch exploded the envelope in number of class one impacts that these projects can have, just wait till you look at the Laetitia project. These were intended to be a solution, not a problem. If nothing else, clustering only existing parcels and not imaginary parcels created through irrigation or any other process would be a simple, at least partial fix. But I think these policies need a complete top-to-bottom reexamination. What is their intent, and what policies, if any, would get us closer to that intent? Is clustering itself a good idea, or is it just creating leapfrog suburban developments in the middle of agricultural land where the kids have no real transportation to town, but unlike farm and ranch kids who have the full life of farm and ranch kids, these are suburban kids surrounded by enticing open space that they can't play in or they'd be trespassing. I mean, this is neither fish nor fowl. The ag and open space element of which they are a part never had an EIR. And the assumption was made when the negative declaration was challenged that these ag cluster policies were a solution, not a problem. They have proven to be otherwise. Please encourage your supervisor to put this on the menu for reexamination as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Leeson Bonnier, followed by Supervisor Patterson.
Good morning, Commissioners, Chairwoman Christie. And it's always an honor to follow Eric Greening because he kind of paves the way. Some of you
all the ones who are very familiar with us, and some of you commissioners have a copy to refresh your memory.
And what you have in front of you was a study session that took place here among the commissioners last year, where they identified 11 areas of concerns regarding the ag cluster policies. These areas are still very fresh. They haven't changed very much. And I am here, just like Eric Greeney, to ask you to champion your supervisors to allocate funds to review ag cluster policies. This is very important because if we take a look at our last situation with Santa Margarita Ranch, just the cost of the appeal would have been enough to direct staff to review our ag cluster policies. And what I'm afraid of is that if it doesn't get the proper review, we will be penny wise and pound foolish, because the ag clusters have too wide of interpretation. It is becoming kind of an agriculture idea that was superior in thinking in the 1980s. It was really thinking out of the box and seemed to be a superior way of protecting ag land, but it now has become more an obsolete way of thinking with today's information, how the county is growing, where it is growing, the impact it has on our resources, the impact it has on agriculture specifically. And so I think it would be in the county's interest to trying to move this policy into the 21st century, so to say, where we get this policy much more in line with state regulations, with new amendments that are coming down, and we're taking in consideration how we grow and where we grow and the protection for our resources. So once again, please bring this forward to your supervisors and say that this issue has not gone away. It will be around for a long time unless we're not trying to deal with this and champion them to consider it for the budgets. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Bonnier. Before you leave the microphone, you made a quite interesting point that the cost of the appeal on the Santa Margarita Ranch was equivalent to what it would have cost the county to undertake a comprehensive review of those policies.
Is to the future of the county of San Luis Obispo. And the Planning Commission, historically, at least in my four-year term so far, has just done a thorough and, I think, exemplary job in analyzing the projects and the ordinances that come before this body. Meticulous work, and I've been very proud of the results of the commission thus far and the recommendations that have come to the Board of Supervisors, and we rely very heavily on your input. And I again want to welcome you and encourage you to continue to do that level of work, because it's much needed and much appreciated. Also, Mr. Greening mentioned a hearing that the board has coming on January 20th. It's a Tuesday after a holiday, so we're not having a regular open session that day. We're having a strategic planning session where in the morning we will be focusing on the county budget, and then later in the morning and in the afternoon we'll be taking a look at planning issues comprehensively, where we're going to go here in the next year with planning. And I encourage all of you to come to that if you're available. I think it would be very informative for you, and we're hoping to help working with planning staff to set the course for the next year in future planning. So I encourage you to come to that if you can, and again, welcome and thank you for your fine service in advance.
Mr. Patterson, excuse me, is that here in chambers, or is that somewhere else? I recall it was somewhere else.
I'm sorry,
last time.
Ms. Wyatt?
Is that hearing here in chambers, or
yes,
is that somewhere
be.
Else this time?
Yeah. Okay.
Supervisor Patterson, thanks for coming down this afternoon. I just wanted to make sure. We'll probably be discussing later on about sending a representative, at least a representative, if not more than one, to that hearing. But can we be assured, as the agenda said at this point, that those planning items will be in the afternoon session, regardless of how quickly you move through the morning?
We will probably start planning immediately after we finish our budget analysis.
So it could be in the morning.
It could be. I expect later morning and then in the afternoon.
Okay, thank you. Okay, seeing no more requests to speak forms, the next item on our agenda is the election of officers. I'm sitting here in the chairperson's seat because I'm currently the vice chair of the former Planning Commission, but the first item of business today is to elect a chair and a vice chair for the upcoming year.
So it will be my pleasure to nominate our vice chair for the chair position.
I'll second that.
Thank you very much. Roll call or unanimous consent or we'll go roll call.
Answered.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Melskow?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
And Commissioner Chairperson.
Yes.
Christy, I'm not going to.
That Christensen Christy thing, I can see that going on for
and
a while.
And we've got a White and a Wyatt, too. So.
Yeah.
I almost answered your roll call.
Thank you for that. Do we have a nomination for vice chair?
It's my pleasure to nominate Commissioner Wyatt as vice chair.
I'll second the motion. And roll
that
call.
That was seconded by
Chris.
Maybe we should just go to first name.
Okay, here we go again. Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Chairperson Christie?
Yes.
Commissioner Melskow?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes. Oh, whoops.
White.
Oh. White? Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
It's going to be fun.
Okay.
Not next one.
Maybe we'll go for as much unanimous roll calls as possible this year. Is that everyone, Madam Clerk?
Commissioner Wyatt.
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much. There is no consent agenda as far as I can tell, so will the clerk please read the first hearing item?
Actually, there is planning staff update.
Planning staff update.
Oh, my apologies. Planning staff update.
Good morning, commissioners, both new and old. My name is Cammie Griffin. I'm the assistant planning director for the county planning department, and I'm here to both welcome the new commissioners and welcome our old commissioners back. I've got some folks I'd like to introduce, but first I'd like to tell you that normally you wouldn't see me sitting here. Normally you would see Warren Hogue sitting here. He's the division manager for current planning. He's also the coordinator of your agendas and your key contact person, along with your clerk, Ellie Porter. He is cruising the Caribbean right now, so of the streamlining measures, and I just wanted to provide you with a brief update. I think it was your second to last meeting last year. You discussed a series of streamlining measures, or three of you did, a series of streamlining measures that were brought forward from a subcommittee made up of two members of the Planning Commission, two members of the Board of Supervisors, and two members of planning staff. And you commented on ones that you agreed with, ones you didn't agree with, you made some modifications. We're planning on taking that back to the Board of Supervisors as part of their second strategic planning session in February. It'll include all of the recommendations and then specifically with Planning Commission's comments. So we'll get you those comments, what we heard you say relative to those various recommendations before that meeting in February for your review.
Thanks, Cammie, and I'm assuming, or I'm leaving at least open the possibility that the new commissioners may have some suggestions as well.
Absolutely.
So if there's a possibility to bring that letter forward with enough time to incorporate any potential new suggestions that might be coming forward, I think that would probably be helpful.
No problem.
Great. And then did you have any comments on the upcoming strategic planning meeting that was reference during public comment?
No, the only thing I would suggest that if your commission wishes to send either a representative or if you'd like to attend, that you discuss that as either part of a They won't have time to do it before the meeting, will they?
Mm-hmm. Well, if the entire commission wanted to go, they could always continue this meeting until that time. But normally they send somebody to represent them, and so there's no need to do that at that point.
So that would be an option for your commission to discuss.
Is the board, do you know if the board will be considering any issues that besides the ag cluster policies that this commission has formally had a communication with the board about?
Yes, actually the telecommunications ordinance is also on the list. What we're going to do is basically provide the Board of Supervisors a list of everything that's on the planning department's plate, mm-hmm. and what we've been told to work on in the order that we feel is coming, notify the board of upcoming, for instance, the conservation and open space element, when we feel it will be available and start hearings with the planning commission, when some large projects are coming forward so that they have an understanding of the workload of the department. And one of the items that is on kind of the list of future things that we know that have been talked about, besides looking at the ag policies and looking at the ag cluster ordinance, is specifically the telecommunications ordinance that your commission sent a correspondence to the board about.
Okay. So we could, if we formally elect to send a representative to that hearing today, I don't think that needs to be agendized or anything, because
I
it's
don't.
Discussions we've already had with the
right.
board. It's just reiterating positions that this commission has already established.
That'd
itself.
Be correct.
Okay.
And the only other item that I have as part of updates is that the Coastal Commission yesterday, and I love this process, acknowledged the county's acknowledgement of their approval of the Estero Area Plan, including some changes to the Coastal Zone Land Use Ordinance. So that's very exciting that that's now finally approved and adopted and will be in place.
So that's in force and effect as of today?
As of today.
Great.
So that acknowledgement is in effect approval?
Correct.
Okay. That's good news.
And did you want to ask about the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did just have one other item of unfinished business. Previous Chairman Rose and I have been on an event subcommittee. So as we welcome our new commissioners here, I did want to kind of ask for some sort of procedure for how we carry on with the business of working a new draft of the events ordinance.
Well, you did specifically continue that to, help me out, Karen, 26th of February. So at that time, you could choose to put a new planning commissioner on a subcommittee or choose to work at it in a different manner. That'll really be your opportunity to bring that up and talk about it as a whole commission.
Just with the idea that some work would get done in the meantime, prior to that meeting, I guess we were looking for some direction from staff and our fellow commissioners on whether they'd like us to proceed, specifically whether there's any interest from new commissioners in joining the committee, or whether you'd like the previous Chairman Rose and I to continue working on that.
Well, I guess it's my turn to
Mr.
talk,
White?
Finally. So I guess this is considered an ex parte. I met with Bob yesterday.
But it's not agendized today.
No, I think you'd put it on the next agenda.
So,
but he may be able to attend, but if he's going to be appointed as official representative, you ought to put it on the agenda and discuss it.
So is there a way we could add that then, maybe, or a sense of interest in adding that to the next agenda?
Yeah.
And then we would just do that as a formality.
We'll add it to the core agenda.
Okay. Then we could get that done at the next meeting and proceed.
And in the meantime, if the subcommittee would like to meet between now and the 22nd,
it's really not a problem. Commissioner Wyatt would be your official
right.
representative, and then the Commissioner White and former Commissioner Rose would be unofficial representatives.
Sure, just
time.
As any member
sure.
of the public is welcome to attend.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a good solution there.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else for planning staff updates?
That would conclude my comments.
Okay, now we're formally going to skip over the consent agenda. And will the clerk please read hearing item number one?
Item one is a hearing to consider a request by People Self-Help Housing Corporation for a vesting tentative tract map and a conditional use permit. County file number... County file number SUB 2007-002-02, District 1, Elizabeth Cavanaugh, Project Manager.
Good morning, Chairman Christie. Welcome to the new commissioners. I'm Elizabeth Cavanaugh, your county planning staff. And your first item for the new year is a People Self-Help Housing Corporation track and conditional use permit. Here's a picture. Can we get that up? Let's see if it works. Well, I'm looking at a pretty picture of the site. There it is. Thank you. This front page is a picture of the site. This is a tract and a conditional use permit. Staff is recommending that you approve the tract and the conditional use permits list based on the conditions and the findings listed in your staff report. Our site is located in Templeton. We're just north of the Twin Cities Community Hospital. This is your land use category map. Your project site is here in white. As you can see, it's a combination of a lot of different uses. Your PF here is the Twin City Hospital. We have some office and professional around here. Most of this area is being developed right, or has been developed with homes. This is what it looks like on the ground. And I'm providing a close-up of the site here in relation to the helipad. Because that was a noise issue, seemed to be one of the issues on the site. Here's your tract map. We're producing lots that range in size from 4,154 square feet to 10,020 square feet. And I turned the map 90 degrees just to try and fit it on the screen in case you're confused here. I flipped it this way. Here's your site plan. Now, this site, Templeton Community Design Plan, has 22 criteria guidelines on designing a project such as this. And so this project meets almost all of them with the exception of four. The reason why we're doing a conditional use permit for this project is for the density bonus of one unit and also so that we can adjust some of the front setbacks. As you see, some of these units have close front setbacks and some of the units have a setback of 8 feet in between the units. The conditional use permit allows us to make those adjustments. I'm going to briefly go through some of the requirements, some of the units. There's three different floor plan types. Some of them have different facades. Overall, they meet the Templeton Community Design Plan, which calls out requirements for, you know, the type of material used outside, the type of material used on the roofs. I mean, it's even as detailed as to tell you where you can place your vents. And they're all guidelines, and this project meets most of those. Now, this project has some, I've got a couple phone calls on this project about the noise conditions being confusing, and the oak tree removal, and I just want to clarify the noise conditions listed on noise condition 36E and 10, they're the exact same. Those were meant to be a menu of items that People Self-Help can pick from to meet that noise requirement of reducing noise from 25 to 30 decimals. It wasn't meant to be a list, a checklist. So there was some confusion in that. So
recently, on a newer subdivision off of Margetts and Pamela Court, there's a tree that was avoided. It's real close to the road, similar distance to the side of the road. You know, it's the only... It's a large tree. I believe it was described in the staff report as a 48-inch tree, approximately 50 feet tall. And we saw a picture earlier of it. You know, it adds a lot of character to the property. It's the only tree on the site that I saw. So I was just wondering if some more consideration could be given to try to hang on to that tree.
I have a picture of that tree. It is a beautiful oak tree. And I know that our Public Works Department, and I'll be glad to let them chime in when I'm done, really do try to save some of these oak trees. I've actually worked with them diligently to try and save oak trees on projects. And I'll let Mr. Marshall address the process they went through, but when I know that they try hard and they tell me they couldn't, I tend to believe them. But if Mr. Marshall wants to chime in.
On the spot. Commissioners, good morning. Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. Although I wasn't directly involved in the conversations between the applicant and the oak tree on this one, I know from direct experience on other projects, we do have a number of tools in our toolbox to try and save trees whenever possible. Those include putting in bulb outs like we did on Duncan Avenue, just up the street on Easterly on Peterson Avenue at the intersection of Duncan. In this case, I did speak with the applicant's engineer yesterday morning and mentioned that this tree might be an issue, and he assured me that he and my predecessor tried diligently to save the tree, but I think it would require a couple of feet of fill, and I'd like to defer to the applicant's engineer, who I believe is in the audience, and he might be able to address the problems that they encountered trying to save the tree. If we could find a way to save it, then Public Works would definitely be open to trying to save it, definitely.
When the applicant comes up to speak in a bit, we can address that.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I had one more on the 6-foot masonry wall that was initially proposed, and now in the new conditions, it's to be deleted. It's proposed to be deleted because of a newer noise study that we were just presented. I also had some safety concerns with the heliport, and when I was reading the staff report, I was looking for that wall when I saw there was a heliport, and I was happy to see it. And if you refer to, I think it's 140 in the staff report, there's a letter from Twin Cities Community Hospital's chairman of the board, Rick Lyons, and he talks about the helicopter will be throwing debris, and that as the community grows, there'll be more helicopter trips. And my concern was for the safety of the families in the backyards with a wood-type fence. I did a site visit, I think it was December 31st, and there was a couple of kids that were cutting a shortcut through that field to get over to the medical center adjacent to the hospital directly behind this property to use their skateboards. They were going skateboarding. And concern with the wood fence, you know, they could be, a board could be kicked in to for a shortcut type deal. And if, you know, I don't know velocities of parts flying off helicopters, but I know you could shoot a gun through a wood fence where you couldn't through a masonry wall. And I was hoping that wall could stay, you know, for safety reasons rather than just noise reasons.
I appreciate you looking out for the safety of the children in the neighborhood. That's important to us also. I do want to point out that there is a wall around, you know, solid masonry wall around the heliport itself, so that if there were flying bolts or debris or some of these things that you're envisioning, that masonry wall around the heliport would block those flying debris, for lack of a better word. Does that ease your mind at all?
Well, when I was out at the site, I didn't see the wall. I saw some warning lights on poles. Red looked like red warning lights for when the helicopter was landing or taking off. But I was thinking more of a barrier, not just for debris and parts flying, but for children maybe running out, you know, in the path of the landing helicopter. And I noticed there was an adjacent four-lot subdivision that's directly behind the heliport, and I didn't know if that's already come to the Planning Commission or if that's coming forward, and if that, you know, is conditioned for a masonry wall or not.
That the four-lot subdivision came about a month or two ago before the Planning Commission. It was conditioned only to provide a wood wall. We certainly could talk about adding that as a condition, the masonry wall. And it is one of the requirements in the noise condition that I just said was a menu, not a list, for a masonry wall. So it could be picked as one of the noise solutions, but we certainly could discuss requiring a masonry wall there. I know that commercial land is required to put up a masonry wall to separate the two uses from the commercial to the residential. So there is a masonry wall around that hospital and that helipad.
I visited the site. I didn't see the wall you're referring to. If there is a wall, it's only visible from the heliport itself, and it must be a small wall just where they cut for a flat pad. It might be a 2-3 foot high wall where they cut for the heliport pad, but there's no physical structure above grade to protect the site that we're discussing here today.
Excuse me. Let me put this site plan or this aerial in and show maybe I'm misunderstanding. Here's your helipad, and the wall I'm referring to is here. And then here's our site, and then there is this commercial, I think it's, is this offices right here?
Medical offices.
Medical offices right here. There is not a wall right here along this property line.
Yes, but the one around that you're referring to around the heliport is only visible from the heliport itself. I believe the grade of the site we're discussing today is above that wall, so it wouldn't prevent debris from flying from the heliport. The heliport wall you're referring to might only be a few feet tall, and it's only visible from the heliport itself. It's a retaining wall to retain the grade that this site that we're talking about. That's my point.
And the wall that was being proposed, that's now being proposed to be removed, can you indicate on the screen where that would be?
That would run along here.
Just along that one
commercial border.
Okay. And it's not proposed for removal, it's proposed to be now allowed to be wood instead of masonry.
Right. And it that was added into the developer statement thinking that it would be a, it was an ordinance requirement to separate the use of the commercial from the residential. However, when I further got into it, that ordinance requirement is only on the commercial land, not on the residential land, to build that wall. So that's why I took it out.
Was it a noise mitigation as well?
It was not.
Okay.
It is one of the options in the menu of the choices that the People Self-Help Housing has to mitigate for noise. But that they have, I think, about 20 choices, 15 choices there that they can mix and match to meet that noise requirement.
Okay.
One more question. If the wall on the adjacent four-lot subdivision isn't required, then it would be unnecessary to require the one on this project also. So I was hoping we could have a continuous wall across both projects.
Other questions? Other commissioners? I just had one on page 1-4 of the original staff report relating to the drainage basin. It says that it's less than 2 feet deep, and it's conditioned to have meandering slopes and banks. And then as I read the revised staff report, it is going to be greater than 2 feet deep, which would necessitate a fence around it. So can you show us on the site plan where the tension basin is and describe what do you have a picture of the proposed outline?
The proposed drainage basin is here in this corner.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, what was the second part of that question?
Well, it's the guidelines say that they need to be not rectilinear in shape and to provide meandering slopes and banks. So I was just trying to get a feel for the shape of the retention basin. It looks like it's roughly rectangular.
This drainage basin is triangular,
yeah.
And it's conditioned to provide the meandering slopes and banks.
Okay. They look like pretty hard, looks like a hard 90-degree angle there. Is that a representative image of what it's actually going to look like?
Well, at this point, it's still conceptual. With the condition for the meandering banks, I suspect that will soften.
Okay. And while we've got the site plan up on the screen, can you indicate where the oak tree is located?
It's located right about here.
Okay.
I can give you an exact dimension. It's a little bit closer to lot 20 on site.
Lot 20.
I actually measured it off the property boundaries out there, so I can give you some approximates. It's closer to the right, splitting the edge of the roadway from the best I could tell. It may be topoed on a topo map, and that would be good if the applicant's engineer could show us exactly where that tree is in relation to the proposed road.
Ms. Kavanaugh, can you indicate which is lot 20?
Yeah, let me get the track map up for you.
If you go to 131...
Lot 20 is here.
Okay.
If you go to 131, there's an X, I believe, in front of lot 20 that shows the location of the oak tree.
Boy, if you can see an X on 131, you got better eyes than I do.
Well, it took a little looking. But
that tiny little X.
I believe that represents the oak tree.
Now, how did you know that was the tree?
Well, I went out and measured the tree, and I saw where it was in relation with the...
Okay.
I have a little bit of experience.
But you're right. It does look very close to the bounds.
This is the water usage spreadsheet that the county uses to determine the amount of water that a project's going to use. This is a Templeton subdivision here. We're doing 39 lots. The top is the indoor residential water use, and as you can see, for this project, it's 0.64 acre-feet a year of water for the indoor use. Now, the outdoor use is a different story. Because this is a small lot, it uses approximately four acre-feet of outdoor use for watering, landscaping, whatnot. So that's almost, four times
more than that, yeah.
The water use for the outdoor use for the landscaping than for the indoor use.
So I just thought it was interesting because I initially questioned these calcs because they seemed so low. But then it's interesting, I thought, to look at the worksheet, the difference in use then really between the inside use, which is just a fraction. It's less than a fourth. It's really more like a sixth or seventh of the outdoor use. And what a small fraction of the usage that actual indoor plumbing fraction is.
I'd like to take this opportunity to show you the difference in a small lot water use versus a large lot water use. As you can see, for a small lot, and we're calling that about 5,600 square feet, you're using, your yard size is about 2,400 square feet. It's just for giggles here, I would like to, maybe I could get some help here, change this to, say this was a large lot subdivision and show you how much extra water this would use. Let's try this. Oh. You know, I don't think this is going to let me.
It's not going to click in.
And the assumptions that you're basing this on is a project that's conditioned to use drought-tolerant landscaping, drip irrigation, those sorts of things, or are you just...
No, this is just straight water usage without conservation.
By lot size. I mean, the calc here is by lot
size. So it's sort of worst-case scenario from a water conservation
perspective.
Absolutely.
If you'd like, I can try and go live and make that change of calculation.
Looks like one of your colleagues actually was going to provide some assistance, but
I think the problem is this is a snapshot of this water usage chart, and I could try and go live and do that if your commission so desired.
Well, I think we need to get to the applicant unless there's a burning desire to.
Well, I think you could just summarize the point there because I did think it was an interesting point, definitely worth noting, that if you look at the interior water use, you know, it's something like 1/7 of the small yard exterior water use. And then if you look at the small lot versus the large lot, the point Ms. Kavanaugh was trying to make, the small lot is actually, you know, less than a third of the large lot. Difference in water use, and so it's huge. So if you take that interior use being 1/7 of the small lot use, and then you multiply that by almost a factor of 4, the interior use is actually, you know, almost 1/28 of the exterior use of a larger lot, and it's a huge difference.
Yeah.
And just I thought really important distinction worth making as I had questioned these numbers, how they were calc'd.
And a quick way to illustrate that is if you look here under outdoor residential water use, for a small lot, it's 0.15 acre feet a year. And for a large lot, it's 0.5 acre feet a year. So that is a substantial difference.
And again, that's with no conditions to...
With no water conservation conditions.
Okay, let's hear from the applicant. Is the applicant here today?
Housing.
Ms. Duncan, I just have to point out that I don't have a speaker slip for you, so when you're done, please hand one in, and anyone else from your team that would like to speak needs to hand in a speaker
slip. Well, we have our team here, our architect Lauren Looker and EDA, our engineer. I wanted to first preface by saying that I was involved in the development.
I'm sorry to interrupt you again. Any member of your team who needs to speak needs to hand in a speaker slip.
Okay.
And I need to know how much time you need for your presentation, Ms.
Okay.
Duncan.
Well, let's hopefully we don't need over 15 minutes max.
Okay, let's try for 10.
We can do that.
Okay.
Anyway, I wanted to preface by saying I was involved both in the four-lot subdivision that Commissioner White referenced, as well as the senior housing on the other side of this site. And I'm a Templeton resident, and I live close by. So when we were going to develop this, one of the major issues for me was how to deal with the oak tree, being a Templeton resident. So when we went to the Templeton Area Advisory Group meeting to review this, they have a local advisory group that reviews things, we discussed at length the problems with the tree, the fact that I had asked the engineers repeatedly over and over again, can you move the street, can you do this, can you?
Good morning. I'm Mike Bertaccini with EDA, 1998 Santa Barbara Street, San Luis Obispo, California. EDA represents the applicant as a civil engineer and surveyor for the project. I want to thank staff for their hard work on this project. While it looks relatively simple to develop, there's some significant issues regarding development and grading and getting sewers to work properly for this part of this little end of this neighborhood. So it's taken a little while to get through the design. If I'll go through my list, I'll begin with Commissioner Smith addressing a couple of your comments, particularly regarding the tree and addressing all the rest of you about the tree. The tree is located right about in the curb line of the proposed street. I did work quite a bit with Richard Marshall before his departure. I'm looking at options to meander the street, do bulb outs in the street. The problem with meandering the street is we're very constrained with the size of the lots, the lot coverage. We do have to meet a certain lot size, and as we meander the street, we take away from lot sizes on the east side of the project that don't allow us to meet the coverage criteria. So therefore, the street really needs to be where it is. So we backed up with a bulb out, pushed the street out, the curb line out around the tree. We can make the street and curb line fit around the tree from a geometric perspective, but the impacts that are going to occur regarding grading on this site are pretty significant, and they begin just north of the tree. The reason we have fairly significant impacts is the lots that run along the east side and the lower side are going to need the sewer with a gravity sewer out to the lower end of Terebinth. We've met and discussed with Templeton CSD. They do not want another public lift station, nor would we recommend a private lift station serving 29 parcels. But that entire part of the project has to be raised significantly. The applicant needs to bring in a significant amount of fill to make that sewer work. We also have to go off-site and reconstruct a portion of Terebinth, changing the slope, lifting it up so that we can get the sewer to extend into this site. In order to do that, starting a little bit north of the tree, on the west side of the tree, we have approximately about a foot of fill that has to occur. So, and with the small lots and the setbacks for the homes, by the time you add a foot of fill, plus do your over-excavation that's recommended by the soils engineer for your over-ex and compaction for the pad, we get those, you know, the fill is going to be right up next to the tree, and that over-ex is turns out to be within about 12 or 13 feet from the actual outside of the tree trunk. On the opposite side of the tree, in the street side, we looked at options to push all the utilities as close together on to the east, still meeting criteria that CSD would like to see for separations, and we're still going to impact, with just the trenching, a significant portion of the canopy. To construct the street, do our structural section and the 1 foot of over-ex underneath the street, we're also going to be filling at that tree on that side to the finish grade of the street, about 0.4 of a foot, adding the curb on top of that. So we have a net fill change of about 14 inches and cut that we're going to make and impact. When you do the numbers looking at the size of the canopy, we're going to significantly impact from a development perspective and grading about 80 or 90% of the canopy of that tree. Our office is concerned, while we're not arborists, is it is a nice looking tree. It is a big tree. We did try really hard to keep that tree, including 7 or 8 different, completely different layouts to lots, trying to make it work. But the sewer is really the driving factor in trying to get this you know, subdivision to function with a good standard design that's easy to maintain and has a good longevity to it. The tree, every way we looked at it, still had fairly significant impacts. Obviously, the way to reduce that is to eliminate lots. And if we do eliminate the lots, this project with the amount of fill that comes in becomes very financially unfeasible. It's borderline right now the way it sits with the amount of infrastructure and earthwork that they have to do to complete the 29.
Bertruccini, I'm sorry, did you have more comments?
No, I'll just we'll take them item at a time.
One of the constraints you mentioned was the size of the lots. Your project is currently proposed is requesting some waivers of other standards. If there was a way for this commission, and I don't know that this is possible, but if there was a way for this commission to authorize a smaller lot size to accommodate the tree, would that, if that constraint were removed, would it be more feasible?
I don't know the smaller lot would help, because smaller lot, we're going to also have, you know, lot coverage. The biggest impact...
That was allowable to give that tree more room to breathe.
I think it could be shifted enough. There's some potential, but then we get into the problem with the product that People Self-Help has to build. You're then going to go to smaller lots. We're already down to about 4,000 square feet, so now you're going to go vertical to get the square footages in a minimum house size and still maintain some outdoor livable area. And that gets to be a different product for them to build. You know, as you know, People Self-Help come in and typically want one-story homes, preferably, because they are built by, non-experienced carpenters with the advice of carpenters and plumbers. So that I would have to leave to the architect and People Self-Help to address. Obviously, if you created a physical area large enough that left the tree alone, there's potential. But we still, in order to get things to work, even if we move the tree away, have to raise the grade. So we are, no matter where we put the street, we're going to be filling that area anywhere from a foot to a foot and a half.
So that causes impacts, you're saying, on its own, just that fill around the tree?
Again, I'm not an arborist. I worked at the City of San Luis for 16 years with Jack Brazil, who was our city arborist at the time for many years. And Jack always enforced upon me some of the most critical parts of the root system are not the big roots down below, but the little hair-like roots that are sitting in that surface. And once you bury those, you choke off that system for that tree to breathe and for it to exchange water and air and nutrients. And so I'm not an arborist, and I can't speak to what it will do to the tree, but we're going to bury the root system all around that tree, probably about 80 to 90% of the canopy.
Okay. Mr. Bertruccini, I guess I'd just like for conversation while you're up, could you guys show the site plan? Because we do have, as Commissioner Christie pointed out, we do have some lots that we're already making some exception for as small as about 4,000 square feet. So I was just curious what we would have to shrink some lots to if we did want to try to shift the road over. Whether we're already at some the smaller lots at that point, or whether we're at some of the larger ones that could possibly be shrunk down. Could you tell us? I now don't remember exactly what the tree point was.
The tree sits right in front of lot 20.
Okay.
If you look at lot 20, it sits in the southerly one-half of lot 20, pretty much in the alignment of the curb. Shifting the road farther to the east, away from the tree, still does not, relieve us of our requirement to bring all that part of the site up in grade, because the sewer at the east end of Terebinth is coming out of the ground right about the knuckle. So in order to make any of these lots fit and gravity sewer, that whole part of the project has to be filled up north of the tree. That's what's causing most of the impact.
Okay.
The other solution we looked at was doing a lift station. So we approached Templeton CSD quite a long time ago, about a year or so ago, and they absolutely would not support a lift station of a public nature. Neither did they have support for a private lift station, because when a private lift station of this size fails, they're the ones that are going to get called to have to come out and maintain it. There's already a sewer ejector pump and lift station servicing privately the senior housing development, and they don't want to add to that scenario. that puts us back to an earthen solution for the sewer, which is ultimately the best for the neighborhood anyway.
And I see then that we are at the point where already those are small lots, so there isn't any space to shift at that lot juncture. If we couldn't realistically make those lots on either side any smaller, I see looking at that, so thank you.
Well, to make them smaller, you'd have to, they're only about 100 feet deep now, 104 feet deep, so you'd have to make them shorter, and then the house has to start to go vertical, and it gets to be more costly and has other construction issues for the people self-help construction.
Well, and it sounds like the lot size is sort of secondary to the cut and fill that has to take place in order for the sewer to work, so...
It's really
sounds like
work
shifting,
in the sewer.
Shifting the road wouldn't get us
wouldn't
where we
even
need
solve
to
the problem if we could there.
So, yeah. Commissioner Christensen, any questions for the applicant?
Nope.
Okay.
Coincidentally, I have a little expertise in the sewer field, and I've dealt directly with this issue myself. Actually, the one I referenced in Margetts and Pamela Court, I had firsthand involvement in maneuvering that road around that tree. And I'm not talking about taking a big swath to avoid all the root zone. I'm just talking about a few feet, because from my taped out measurements on this, I won't bore you with all the measurements. You guys know them better than I do. But it appeared to me that, it, like you mentioned, it's right on the curb. So I was thinking 5-6 feet is all we would need to avoid this tree. And I do understand the sewer constraints. And what's been done in the past is an Allen block wall around the tree, you know, to be able to elevate your...
Balance the tree out, and it's there's just not a lot of structure left on the roadside anchoring the tree in the ground. And that's going to depend a lot on the condition of the tree in the future and prevailing winds of the day that it happens. And so I'm not going to, you know, claim it's going to fall one way or the other. Just us as a company of engineers being a little cautious about when we damage that much area around a tree, what are the potentials? We just wanted to bring that to light.
Okay. I've got one more speaker slip here if there are no more questions for this applicant.
Well, if I could address one more item.
Oh,
if I could
certainly.
Go back to Commissioner Chairperson Christie, your comment about the basin and the shape. The basin is at this point fairly triangular. It does come to a square rectangular corner in the southeasterly corner, because that conforms to the property lines, and that's also the point of access that we're going to provide a road down in for the County Public Works to access during an emergency.
How deep is the new basin going to be?
It's going to be from 4 to 6 feet deep.
And that's going to necessitate a fence around it?
Correct.
And the details of that fence?
Have not been designed yet. That's at this point, once we get into construction documents further, we'll deal with the landscaping plans for the around the basin, and that was usually passed by planning and building of public works.
Okay, the last speaker slip I have is Pamela Giardini.
Good morning, Commissioners. Pamela Giardini at 1360 New Wine Place in Templeton, so I'm a resident of Templeton. I happened to be at the Templeton Area Advisory Group when this project went before the Community Advisory Group, and there was quite an in-depth discussion, much as you're having today here, about the oak tree, because if we all remember, the oak tree that came down when Bennett went through was quite a problem. And I am summarizing my viewpoint so you understand that the Templeton Area Advisory Group did discuss it in detail and realized that we have to make tough choices, or they had to, in density versus trying to save the tree. And Mike Bertaccini and his group did present that to the community that was there that day and to the advisory group. And I believe their recommendation is probably included in your report that they supported it. And they think they tried the same thing to try to save the tree. But I can just concur with what Mike has stated here, that that's what was stated as the advisory group, and that the community, you know, did support the density and the development, realizing they would lose the tree. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Seeing no more speakers, bring it back to staff. Well, the applicant could have a last word, but the applicant's representative was the last word, so assuming the applicant has nothing else to add. Okay, Ms. Duncan.
One thing we didn't mention, it's all affordable housing for very low and low-income households, and we'll have fixed-rate financing. that is below market. So it's really an asset, and we have many families in North County that are waiting on our waiting list to get a chance to build their own home. So I want to thank you for that, and that it will be a good asset and help Templeton and members of the community.
Understood. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to indicate that based on the comments earlier about minimum parcel size here, the minimum parcel size for this is 7,500 square feet, so almost all of these lots are below the minimum parcel size based on the affordable housing conditional use permit.
And could they be reduced still further?
They could be reduced up to your discretion as long as you can make the required findings.
Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Orton. Ms. Kavanaugh, anything to add from the discussion?
No, I do believe that both the applicant and Public Works worked hard to save that tree.
Okay, bringing it back to the commission. Where do we think we're going with this?
Well, I'll start a yes. Again, my two issues are the tree and the masonry wall. I do understand, the cost involved, and I'm not trying to pile cost onto the applicant. It's just I've just had some experience in this area, and there's a lot tougher topographical sites. The one I referenced at Margetts and Pamela is very, very difficult topographically. And the tree was saved. The roadway was put around it. Same thing, the roots were uprooted to bring in base and to recompact. And, I've actually done it. So I know that the trees are a lot more durable than we give them credit for sometimes. And the lack of an arborist report in the staff report, I've worked with arborists that their opinion is, even though the tree was...
The project overall... At the same time, I hear from arborists who say, good quality mitigation is better than trying to save a tree that's going to be living in a marginal environment. Staff, could you talk a little bit about what the mitigation proposal is for the tree removal?
The mitigation for the removal of this tree is to plant 4 oak trees. It's a 4-to-1 mitigation for removal of oak trees. It's our standard oak tree mitigation. There's also...
Those trees will be planted where? And
within the subdivision. There's also some requirements for maintenance of the newly planted trees to ensure that they survive.
And the size of those trees will be?
I don't believe they're called out. 1 gallon.
1 gallon. Yeah. So we're looking at 4 1-gallon oak trees to replace them.
Well,
I'm seeing that the applicant is...
There would be more. The applicant mentioned they were going to disperse the oak trees throughout the subdivision, so there won't be just 4.
So it's
that's
not
what
a 4-to-1,
they're required.
It's not a standard 4-to-1 mitigation.
It is the standard 4-to-1 mitigation, but this applicant's going above and beyond that with their landscape plan.
I thought there were 15-gallon trees, not 1-gallon trees.
Excuse me.
So 4 15-gallon
trees?
15-gallon trees.
Or
15 1-gallon trees.
No, 15-gallon trees.
Excuse me, 15.
Is that right? I'm usually terrible with details, but I was concerned about this tree also.
Oh, I'm looking on page 1-56, which is part of the environmental document that calls out 1-gallon tree, which is our typical oak tree mitigation.
But I think the applicant's saying that they've offered to put in some larger trees, and maybe worth clarification since it seems like an issue.
Name
for the record, please.
Jeanette Duncan. We're putting in 15-gallon trees and more than 4. We're going to put in as many as we can, realizing because of the size of the
trees. Okay, then that's something that, thank you for that, Ms. Duncan. That would be something that if we were going to go in that direction, we would need to clarify in the conditions. Is that not the case, Ms. Kavanaugh?
Well, Ms. Duncan is up. Maybe it would be a good time to ask if she would be amenable to some stricter conditioning than for the tree planting. If that's already planned, then maybe that would be wise to get it in the conditions.
Right. We would accept the condition that they be 15-gallon trees.
And how many? If you're expecting already to plant a number, maybe we would.
I can't remember what we came up with. Quite a few, I think.
Well,
Do you think eight? We put in eight. Maybe six. 15-gallon trees.
Get something like 6 15s in the conditions. That'd be a little more palatable than 4 1s.
And we can discuss that as a commission in terms of what we think is appropriate.
No, as I said, this is something personal for me as being a Templeton resident and also a longtime gardener and protection of trees. The staff could tell you how hard I drove this thing trying to save it. And so if we're going to take it down, we have to replace it with big trees and as many as possible.
Thank you, Ms. Duncan.
Just to clarify, on page 1-12 of the original staff report, under improvement plans, I guess these are the conditions of approval, it's a landscape plan, 52 street trees, and 15-gallon, the preferable minimum size is 15-gallon. I don't know if street trees are the same thing as what we're talking about in terms of mitigation trees, but
it's a good question.
That's kind of where it's focusing on 15-gallon.
May I make a suggestion? Street trees can be used for mitigation, but they're looked at as separate issues. Sometimes they can cross over. But on the numbered staff report, condition number 32 on page 1-15, that's where we find the tree replacement requirement. I'm recommending that after the, in the second sentence, starts with the plan shall provide for replacement in kind at a 4-to-1 ratio. All oak tree removed at this as a result of the development of this project. I think I should state that the applicant shall plant 6 15-gallon oak trees and just take out that 4-to-1 ratio discussion.
So what is the condition that you're reading?
It's on page 1-15 of the original staff report.
Condition number
32.
32. Okay. Thank you.
And this is Valley Oak? Ms. Kavanaugh, this is Valley Oak?
Let's see what the plant was removed. Valley Oak, yes. Project. And the botanical report, if I remember reading it, concluded that the tree wouldn't survive the grading and the fill.
I know we're sort of beating this to death, but I just want to say for the record that it's always, I mean, I understand that people did make an effort to try and save the tree, and I believe that those attempts were sincere and well-intentioned. But it's always, whatever kind of developer we're looking at, we're always going to be facing the reality that it's the economically preferential road to take, no pun intended, to remove the trees. And, if there's a possibility, I mean, of course the cut and fill would kill the tree. But as Commissioner White pointed out, there's the opportunity to build Allen block walls to keep that fill from impacting the tree. And, if there's a possibility to, move the road in order to reduce the number of roots that get cut, we find ourselves in this situation where, on the one hand, we hear engineers come before us and say all things are possible, in terms of building on steep slopes and building, in unstable sites. And then, something as simple as saving a tree becomes impossible. And it just, I guess I just really want to encourage staff and applicants to take the extra effort to try and find creative solutions to ways to save these beautiful old trees. Because even 6 15-gallon trees, and Valley Oak trees grow fairly rapidly, but, this is a beautiful tree that we're going to lose. And it's a good project, and I'd like to support it too, but I just would like to see if we can raise the bar a little bit in terms of getting creative in how we approach these things.
I agree with all that was just said. And to follow up on that, my concern is, I'm the new guy, and I just want to show consistency, and I want to be assured by staff, and I want to be confident that if this was not an affordable housing project, if any other developer came forward,
that we would do the same thing with this tree. And I'm not, from my personal experience, I don't believe that to be the case. And I'm really concerned about that.
I basically want to just mention that while I do understand and support in general Commissioner White's and Commissioner Christie's concerns, I also, I guess I have a little bit more faith in not only staff and engineers working on this issue. When they say they tried everything they could think of, I do believe them. And I also do know Ms. Duncan personally, and I basically trust that if it was in my neighborhood, I would have done everything I could to figure out how to save this tree. And what I'm hearing, and what I do believe from my understanding of how trees are, is that while it's a beautiful tree right now, by the time you finish with this, it might not have been such a beautiful tree, and it very well probably would be dead. And you know, when you start talking about cutting most of the canopy and cutting the roots and filling it and covering up the what's remaining with a foot or two of fill, you know, that's going to kill the tree. And I'm not an arborist either, but I also know that as well as you know, the other personal knowledge that commissioners have brought. So I absolutely support the idea of having something like an arborist report would have been very useful, and the idea that even for one tree, I think this commission will make a huge effort. But I do believe that in this case, that effort has been made, and I am satisfied that that this is probably the best solution to go with the mitigation instead of continuing with the tree.
Discussion on the masonry wall?
I had a remaining question on that, because it sounds like Commissioner White was suggesting that the wall around the helipad isn't even coming up above grade on the housing side. And I guess that was on the other approved tract, really. But it sounds like there was some remaining issue there. Was the wooden wall already built there, Commissioner White, or that was required for that approval? Or
no, I didn't see any barrier
yet
there at all.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure then. I guess that's coming and will be 6 feet above grade or whatever is conditioned.
Yes, the previous subdivision that your board approved did have a wooden wall that will be at least 6 feet high.
Okay, so
along that property line.
And that just hasn't been constructed yet?
No, I think it just came before you a month or two ago.
Okay, just wanted to make sure we didn't have some conflict there.
And I guess just for clarification, this project proposed will also have a continuous wooden wall?
Yes.
Okay.
Unless they go for that
the
option
masonry
and the menu of masonry wall.
For the noise prevention.
Menu of noise options.
Chair Christie. Glenn Marshall, county basis into perpetuity.
Well, it sounds like a fenced drainage basin is going to be a condition of the project.
Right.
So, I mean, we could change that wording to make it more explicit. Or
this is our stock condition.
Right, okay, then that's fine.
They could come in during plan check and decide they want to go underground with the basins. I mean, that's conceivable.
I just have a question about the fencing around the drainage basin. I'm assuming that, you know, it's to keep people out of it, more or less, and so I'm picturing a chain link fence around the drainage basin. That's sort of what's coming to mind.
Commissioner Christie, I might be able to add. County Public Works, our standard basin fencing is chain link with redwood slats.
With wood slats.
Redwood slats.
Because I'm just thinking it's awful. This is a fairly dense development, and the drainage basin is going to be in very close proximity to the houses, and so it's obviously going to be a visual component to several people's backyards. And chain link fencing around drainage basins, I'm picturing covered with trash bags and styrofoam cups and those sorts of things, which isn't going to be a very attractive feature for the neighborhood. And I'm wondering if we could maybe talk a little bit about what the fencing should, or what the fencing could be, if that's appropriate at this time.
Certainly, Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. The only requirements Public Works has is that the space between the bars does not exceed 4 inches, and that the height be at least 6 feet tall. Other than that, it can be materials of your liking. I would recommend metals or something that has longevity to it. Wrought iron is
sort of picturing split rail myself. Not 6 feet high.
the purpose of the fencing is to protect the public and especially the kids in the backyards and not getting into it when it has water.
Okay.
So the 4-inch diameter spacing is a UBC requirement to keep babies' heads out of basins, and the height is a requirement to keep, to help prevent children from wanting to jump over a tall fence.
I'm thinking of all the ponds and puddles I played in as a child.
Yes.
And
other than that.
And I seem to have survived. I'm just wondering, it also provides a pretty impermeable wildlife barrier. And I'm wondering if we could maybe shift our perspective on drainage basins from being, you know, dangerous child abductors to being an attractive and functional piece of an overall development.
It's possible. There are, like I say, there we have the safety considerations.
Yes.
I got one suggestion possibly on that. We do have if the masonry wall goes away, we would have a wood boundary fence along the southern boundary. Mm-hmm. It appears that the drainage basin's in the southeast corner of the property. Could it be just clipped across on an angle, that same fence, so it looks continuous to the project, so it doesn't stick out as an eyesore, you know, the chain link? It will look like part of the southern boundary fence. It would just continue on. Clipping on a 45, let's say, across the lots 13 and 14's backyards until it runs into the eastern property line.
So the proposal is to use a wooden fence?
Whatever fence is used along the southern border.
I think they're proposing the wooden fence, as I recall. I would try to venture away from wood fences because the plants can easily be pulled off. They do deteriorate over time.
All the points I made about the safety issue with
exactly.
The teleport.
Okay, I'm sorry. I hate to shoot you down.
But the maintenance responsibility is on the applicant.
Potentially. I mean, the applicant has the ability to ask for annexation to flood control district 16, mm-hmm. which would put the maintenance responsibility on the public.
Mm-hmm.
And that would increase the basically we would back charge each individual lot that uses the basin, and that would increase the cost of maintenance to them. So if we can have something metal that lasts for a long time, the cost would be less, both to the county and to the residents.
Not to put you on the spot.
Sure.
It's okay if they get into the heliport, but they can't get into the drainage basin.
They can't go catch polywogs.
Yeah. Okay. Just so I understand.
I don't want to acknowledge that.
I'm sorry. I should have. I couldn't resist that one.
Point. It's an excellent point. Yeah. Bringing up. It's worth
I'm sorry. I just couldn't.
There's some inconsistency in the sort of threat there, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe
noting.
Since staff recommended changes to the conditions, we should ask the applicant if they have any comment they want to make on it. Because these recommended changes should have been probably made up front so the applicant could comment.
Does staff have any, or does the applicant have any comment to make?
And our consultants feel that the conditions are acceptable. And by the way, I'm Jeanette Duncan speaking again for People's Self-Help. I did want to talk, if I could, just a minute about
the public hearing is really closed at this right. point, unless there's something germane to the
discussion
of the fencing.
No, we accept the conditions.
Okay, thank you. Again, but the design and material of the fence is open at this point, so if we wanted to make any definitive decisions in that way, this would be the time and place.
Only can be 4 inches wide.
Yeah.
I think it's better than a solid fence.
Yeah.
And it's safe and it's easily maintained
and
it looks
wildlife
nice.
Permeable.
And it's wildlife permeable for things that are narrower than 4 inches or can become so.
I like that idea. Actually, there's some prefabricated that you're talking about.
Yeah,
has little arrows on top that I think is relatively cost efficient.
Yeah,
so a question is, do they meet the 4-inch requirement? I think what
yes.
some
yes.
people are
yes, they do. That's
accurate.
That's to keep children from being able to go between the bars.
Could use around pools.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
A standard building code.
So, Ms. Kavanaugh, if we were going to build that in as a condition, where would you suggest we add that?
Top of page 14 of your new staff report, item B. It requires the drainage-based fencing. You just say shall be wrought iron meeting UBC requirements.
All right. I like the sound of this wrought iron, but while we're flipping pages here, I'm also conflicted. It is an affordable housing project, and I don't know what added expense this brings in. Does anybody have some idea? I agree it would look better and be nicer.
But at the same time, I'm not sure for extra expense, I'm not sure this is a high priority.
I don't know if the applicant has any input on that, but I don't believe it would be that much more for the prefabricated wrought iron. You know, it's just a hollow tubing than a chain link with the slats would be. It might be, I'm sure it'd probably be a little bit more, but I don't know dollars. So if the applicant has any...
Good point, and Commissioner Christensen just made.
It's a good point she's is making.
Anything with wood's going to be usually less, I mean, to last less long than something that's just plain iron. I mean, iron needs to be painted every once in a while, but so does, I mean, wood fencing needs to be, all kinds of things done to it.
Could we have some response from the applicant to this then, since we're just springing this upon them?
I think from my perspective, safety is an issue more than visual. And the reason that we thought about the rod, chain link was you can have vines and other things cover it, but it lasts a long time. It's easier to maintain. We do have at some of our developments, our multifamily developments, some wrought iron. They do require, believe it or not, maintenance. You have to paint them. They rust. Oftentimes the gates, we just had one where the hinges on the gates rusted and deteriorated, and it cost, you know, $1,000 just to replace a very small pedestrian walkthrough. So in some respects, the chain link with vines or visual plantings, from a safety standpoint, I think would be good, because you are going to have children here, and children like Commissioner Christie said, they like to get into the polywalks and get in, and I am concerned about safety.
And I actually made that point to encourage children to get in with the polywalks.
It's just that, you know, we don't want them getting in if the water's too deep. And most, if this were to be maintained by the drainage district, they're going to want a secure metal, and usually they are used to the chain link. We have a couple of these in some of our self-help subdivisions where we have done chain link with wooden slats, but we don't have to put wooden. We can do plantings, vines, things like that, which in some respects are better visually than something that has to be constantly...
Okay, so your preference is for chain link, but you do have developments that have wrought iron, so you have experience
with
both.
Yes, and wrought iron is expensive to put in, and then there are maintenance issues, unfortunately.
Okay, thank you.
If the rest of the commissioners are interested in pushing for the wrought iron, I'm okay with it, but I'm not going to... In the scheme of things here, if the applicant prefers to stay with a chain link and the standard condition, I'd prefer we stay with that too.
I agree, and with the landscaping and the vines and so forth, the chain link can become attractive, so I agree.
I'm going to maybe push for commissioners to think about this a little further, only because, again, I think the safety is a wash. Wrought iron's going to be as safe from a public safety perspective as the other. For those people who live in those homes that are going to have a direct view out their backyard, I mean, we can talk about how lovely the vines will be, but the reality is that chain link fences trap trash. Vines take a long time to grow. They die in a hard freeze, and then you've got a dead vine on the fence. My personal strong feeling about this is really having to do with the wildlife accessibility to the pond. You know, an increasingly urbanized environment, these little localized water sources are really important for things like raccoons and possums and skunks. And amphibians are in dire straits. All would be worth it for the overall quality of the development. So I'd like to support my fellow commissioners to encourage them to support the wrought iron alternative.
All right. I wouldn't go along with you on aesthetic, but the suggestion is that wildlife can creep through these wrought iron verticals where it cannot creep through these chain link sections. Is that something that's known, that people know, or is that some contention you're making right here today? Or
Is that something staff could verify? I might be inclined to go along with you on the wildlife argument if there's some validity to that argument.
Well, I can verify that. Where we live in Paso Robles, we live up on the west side, and I laughed when you were making your comments. I wasn't laughing at your comments. I was laughing at the
You're
skunks.
You're free to laugh at my comments.
I was laughing at the skunks because we have a skunk visit us you know, nightly, and I have a dog that, you know, gets a bath quite often. So, and we have the 4-foot wrought iron spacing and the skunks, and we have the raccoons, and all the wildlife does go through our fence.
4-inch spacing?
Yes.
Yeah. That there's skunks and critters are getting through.
Yes.
Well, I think your wildlife argument's pretty plausible there, and I might be inclined to go along with you on that one.
Okay.
It's access to the water is something important for the wildlife there, what bit there may be, so that may be a stronger argument than some kind of aesthetic if we're on the fence post here, as it were.
So do we sort of have a straw vote before we make a motion in terms of what that motion might include as conditions?
Somebody else going to go along with us on the wrought iron?
Yeah, I'll go along
perimeter
with the wrought iron.
There? Okay, around the basin?
Yeah.
And that would be 14E? A new 14 condition, a new condition 14E.
Yes.
And then would you read that, just read that back in for us so we know what we're not on to?
Sure. On 14B, on new staff
14E, as in elephant? Or are we adding to B drainage?
I was adding it to
fencing,
B.
Oh, okay. Shall be, blah, blah,
okay.
blah.
That the drainage basin fencing shall be wrought iron.
And then condition 32 had to do with the 6-to-1 Valley Oak replacement ratio. Do we want
for the new staff report, it's page 16, condition 30.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking at the old staff report.
And that will read, at the time of application for subdivision improvement plan, the applicant shall submit a tree replacement plan to be reviewed and approved by the environmental coordinator. The plan shall provide for 6 15-gallon valley oak trees.
On site?
On site.
Before a motion is made here, I just want to thank the applicants. I know we're looking at the particulars here, but I do want to thank the applicants for being able to bring this project forward and very much appreciate the opportunity here to get 29 units that are affordable.
Indeed. And they look like very attractive units as well.
And nice looking ones too, yes. So thank you very much for bringing this forward and moving on it.
Are we ready for a motion at this point?
This is my first time making a motion, so
I'll just say for clarification that our practice has always been that the commissioner from the district gets to make the first motion. So sorry to throw you in the deep end there, Commissioner White, but
well, here we go.
We do have a recommended action on page 1-1, if that's helpful.
I'm looking at that right now, and with that, I'll make a motion that we adopt the negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of the California Environment Equality Act, Public Resources Code, Section 21,000, and approve the vesting tentative tract map 2458 and conditional use permit SUB 2007-00202 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and Exhibit C and the conditions as modified listed in Exhibit B and D.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded, and just for the record, those can...
We did the second.
Carlin.
And for the record, those modified conditions are the inclusion of condition 36K, 37C, 37D, as proposed by Public Works, and condition 30, as read into the record by staff regarding the oak trees, and condition 14B, as read into the record by staff, relative to the wrought iron fencing. Roll call.
How about the changes in this that was sent out?
The new staff report? Well, that's the document we're working off of.
Oh, okay.
So the motion includes those changes.
Okay.
Is that
well, I just want to
correct?
Make sure that
it might be important
that we're talking. We're continuing to experience technical difficulties this morning.
Item 2 is a hearing to consider a request by Ken Lerno for a vesting track map, track 2933, county file number SUB 20070030, District 1, Holly Phipps, project manager.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Planning Commission. I would like to also welcome our new members to the Planning Commission. My name is Holly Phipps, and I'm the project manager. Before you today is a request by Ken Lerno for a vesting tract map to subdivide an existing 2.5-acre parcel into six parcels of about 7,500 square feet each. This project was referred to Public Works, and after their review, a turning radius on the corner of proposed parcel 1 was required. As a result of this, parcel 1 would no longer meet the minimum parcel size of 7,500 square feet. So the request also includes designating this parcel a transfer of development credit receiver site to allow the parcel to be subdivided into six parcels instead of five. Sorry about that. The site is located in the community of Templeton at the The site is located in the community of Templeton at the intersection of Eddy Street and Cayucas Avenue. The proposed project is located in the residential single-family land use category and is located in the Salinas River planning area. Here we have a look at the proposed site plan, and it demonstrates that the parcel configuration is consistent with the neighborhood parcel configuration. Staff is recommending approval of the request for this transfer of development credit for the proposed project because it meets the TDC requirements as required by the land use ordinance. On December 30th, staff had sent to the Planning Commission track changes that indicated changes to the conditions in the staff report. So I'd like to read into the record changes to the staff report. Condition 17 on page 29 of the original staff report, staff would like to delete that condition, affordable housing fee number 17, and replace it with 17, which states inclusionary housing. Prior to the filing of the final parcel map or tract map, the applicant shall pay the residential in lieu fee pursuant of section 2212-80C2B, or the applicant may defer in lieu fee payments pursuant of section 2212-80J4C. Ted Bench with planning staff is here today to answer any and all your questions that you might have dealing with our new inclusionary housing fees. On page 214, there's a minor modification to condition 28. At the end of the first sentence, staff would like to remove the period and insert and recordation along with the map, period. Staff would like to add letter D, which states notification to prospective buyers that an additional map sheet was recorded with the final map or tract map. The restrictions, conditions, and standards set forth in additional map sheet apply to future development. It is the responsibility of prospective buyers to read the information contained on the additional map sheet.
Ms. Phipps, excuse me, while we're there, Mr. Orton, this language of the additional map sheet keeps getting added. I've never understood why, while we're there, this additional sheet. Could you just speak to that?
What it is, the additional map sheet is something that sets forth conditions that have to be complied with in the future. And this stock term that we've had on the CCNRs puts a provision in the CCNRs that alerts people to look at the additional map sheet for additional conditions. At one time, we used to duplicate them, and they were very lengthy, and so we shortened up the CCNR provision to reference the additional map sheet to make sure that everybody knew that those provisions were around, because sometimes the additional map sheet is recorded along with the map, and people don't think about going looking at the subdivision map.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. I understand that now. Thanks.
And so, Ms. Phipps, are there new conditions that are going to be added that additional map sheet is going to include? Or is this just the standard language,
the new language that
we always use that just got left off accidentally on this
one? It's the standard language that...
Chair Christie, it's a memorandum that I just put on your desk tables this morning.
Oh, it's not in our notebook?
It's a second part of the People's Self-Help.
Correct.
It was on the same page, if I'm not mistaken.
I left the...
It was the last half of the page with the People's Self-Help.
Oh, it's this one.
You're right.
Okay, got
it. In fact, there's three projects on here that will have changes.
Oh, I see. This completely off what you gave it.
Right. That's right.
I was trying to save a tree.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Keep doing that.
Okay.
Tree by tree.
I'll start off on just a change on page 237. It's a correction, and this has to do with the environmental determination. In the staff report, it says under impact that the proposed project manual of 60 trips per unit, that should be 9.6 per unit. And then some recommended conditional language on page 8 of the revised staff report. I'd like to modify condition 2A. And I'll give you a tad bit of history on that. If I can.
Let us get to page 2-8.
On the revised, yes, page 8 of the revised conditions. The track conditions.
Oh, okay.
So if we're ready, I'll.
What condition are we
on?
Okay.
Condition 2A on page 8. Under Exhibit B of the revised conditions.
Yeah. The revised conditions are the one that are in our black notebooks.
Well, I've got them here, too, so I got them yesterday here, but okay. I think I've got it under conditions, Exhibit B.
Just wait till we get to our double revised conditions.
I'll go to the notebook because they're probably numbered for me.
Double revised, not revised?
Yeah. All right.
If you go to the orange tab number 2, it's conditions Exhibit B, page 8.
I got it. Both of them here.
Okay.
Okay. Condition 2A. I'd like to add, I'll just read it into record and I'll highlight the two things. Cayucas Avenue constructed to a two-thirds A1 section on the project side within a 40-foot, add the word minimum, dedicated right-of-way, fronting the property, minimum paved width, strike the word 2 and add shall be 18, strike 18 and add 20 feet. The reason for that is the project was accepted as complete after our changes, our standards had been updated. And the standards now have a minimum 20-foot width, as requested by Cal Fire, in this case Templeton Fire. Same page, I'd like to delete condition of approval 5H. There are no trail plans. Next page, on page 9 of the revised staff report, delete condition of approval number 13. It's just a poor repeat of a condition 12, and then renumber. And that's it.
And quick question relative to why you're recommending that we delete condition 5H for the trail plan?
There is no trail plan, and in the past, Chair Rose had said, Glenn, there's no trail plan? Why do we have this condition? So I'm just trying to be consistent with direction from your commission from last session. But we could leave it in.
I did pick up on that, Glenn, but it says as applicable in the...
Exactly. So I
didn't think there was a trail plan, but with the as applicable, I thought if they don't apply, they just go away anyway.
That's true. This is a stock condition. I remember in the past, Mr. Rose.
The way I read this condition, and maybe, I don't have that context, so I'm not reading it that way. I'm reading that they need to prepare an improvement plan.
Mm-hmm.
And the plan has to include all these things, which, you know, water plan, sewer plan, and it needs to include a trail plan for the development.
As applicable as Commissioner White had mentioned. And it's not applicable in this case.
And it's not applicable, why?
Because I don't believe we ever got a request from Parks and Rec to add a trail. The trail plan has to do with the the trails that go along the corridors that's recommended by Parks and Rec.
Right, now we have a park element and all of that. But I remember discussing when we approved our park and rec element that the park and rec element wouldn't supersede any project-specific trail requirements that the Planning Commission and the Board may choose to require on development. It's not like, oh, if it's not in the county's trail rec element, then it doesn't exist. And so is this one of those situations where we could, if as we go on with this discussion, if it makes sense to have some trail component to this project, we could talk about that.
I'm going to look to my right, the council.
Well, the Jim Orton
and quality of something that is not. So, I would suggest if we're not going to include the trail, I'm open to that discussion.
Yeah.
But that it would come out just to simplify.
Yeah. But let's not prejudge that question. Is all I'm saying.
Okay.
Okay. Was that anything else, Mr. Marshall?
That was it. Thank you very much, Chair.
And Ms. Phipps, does that conclude your presentation, or?
Ted Bench is here to read in the record. He thinks perhaps I left out some wording that I did for number 17, so he's going to clarify that.
Good. Thank you. I'm passing out some revised wording. I think it's the condition 17 that talks about the inclusionary housing ordinance. Okay. And the reason this, what you're about to see is an email correspondence between myself and the agent. Originally, when I first wrote the condition for the staff report about inclusionary housing, I was suggesting to the agent that probably the easiest thing to do would be to pay a fee, but I've been corrected since then. The actual intent of the inclusionary housing ordinance is to provide or create affordable housing. The developer has options. He can build housing or pay a fee or donate land. And so this condition clarifies that. The first sentence says that prior to filing the final tract map or parcel map, the applicant shall enter into an inclusionary housing agreement to ensure construction of one inclusionary housing unit. As an alternative, he may pay the in-lieu fee, either with the map recordation or prior to occupancy of the units. So that's the intent of this, adding this sentence in the front of the condition 17. The only other change I could suggest is on the staff report itself. There was a reference to, I believe, on page 2-4 about affordable housing, and it was referring to Title 18, but that section of Title 18 has been, it no longer applies. We're not collecting 3.5% affordable housing in lieu fee with new subdivisions. The inclusionary housing ordinance now replaces replaces Title 18 as far as what the county is requiring of new subdivisions with regard to affordable housing. So those are the only changes.
Mr. Bench, I'd just like to note that this is the first project we're seeing coming through with the inclusionary housing requirement, and I'd like to again thank you and Mr. Stevenson for all of your work on getting that through, and pleased to see that the requirement kicks in here and we'll start the process.
So the point of your clarification to the amended condition is to clarify that the applicant doesn't only have the choice of paying the in-lieu fee now or paying the in-lieu fee later, that the applicant could also provide actually a unit on site or a donation of land.
That's correct.
But is, rather than leaving that question up to a later date, would it be possible to nail down which of those options are going to be exercised or choose one of those options here today?
I think in the future we'll see that, but for today's permit, for today's hearing, the condition does allow the flexibility. They can either build a house or pay fees. The condition was worded to do that. In the future, when we have more time with applicants, we will try to narrow it down. We will ask them so that the condition will say either they have chosen to pay fees or they're going to provide a house.
But if they build the unit, that would change the design of the
of the project and the map that we're recording. Is that correct?
That's true. If the applicant had told us ahead of time which way they want to satisfy the inclusionary housing ordinance, we would write a condition to say it that way. But being that this is the first project to come through, we've created a flexible condition that lets them make that choice down further down the road.
But we're considering a track map, a vesting map here that delineates the actual parcels.
It does.
So if they were going to build an inclusionary unit, they would have to create a parcel for that unit.
They could build it on one of the six parcels.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You were thinking of a density bonus, you mean, in addition?
Yeah.
To that they would get the density bonus, yeah, is what you were thinking.
Because that's part of the ordinance, too, as I recall, unless the board...
That's true, although we have an issue there because we would have to make sure that an extra lot did not go down below 6,000 square feet, but... that is the minimum lot size in the single-family zone.
Well, you know, having to deal with a new ordinance and this being the first project, I mean, it's the whole thing is a learning process, so...
Or pay fees. In the case where there's a fraction of a unit required, again, the applicant can provide a unit or pay fees. In my earlier discussions, I suggested because only a part of a house would be required with this first subdivision, it's probably easier to pay in lieu of fees, especially because we're in a five-year phasing period. It's a lot easier just to, at this point in time, to consider paying fees rather than building a whole unit.
And have you calculated what that fee is going to be?
Yeah, the fee is about $4,000 per lot, so that's a total of $24,000 on this project. Ultimately, after 5 years, it would be $20,000 per lot, so that we... would be getting about $120,000 on this project.
So for this project, the applicant's choice is building a unit on one of the six parcels or paying a $24,000 fee.
That's
I think
correct.
We can all pretty much guess what the preference is going to be, which I just want to say makes the point that I made repeatedly in the hearings that we had on the inclusionary housing ordinance when it was before this commission, that creating this kind of flexibility and options for applicants quite frequently, if not almost entirely, will dictate them to write the check instead of build the house. So I just wanted to make that observation.
As made, while we're still in this earlier phasing, we're at, you know, some fraction, one-fifth of the 15%. So certainly in these earlier phases, I would agree it's not going to work out. I would hope later that will not be the case.
But I have to say, having observed the use of actually much less stringent requirements in the city of San Luis Obispo's inclusionary housing, we saw a lot of units being built, even though the land prices and cost to build are as much or more than most of the rest of the county. So I really don't agree with your assumptions. In this situation, with such a small project, and because you've just implemented this new ordinance, and the developer, you know, didn't have this in mind, I can understand why the payment of the fee. But you'd be surprised how many units you actually get built, even on small projects.
Time will tell, and
yeah.
I hope I'm wrong, because as Mr. Bench said, inclusionary housing means included on the site with the market rate
development.
Absolutely. Any other questions for staff?
I had one question. I'm not sure if it's for Ms. Phipps or Mr. Bench, but in Ms. Phipps' presentation, she mentioned that because of a road corner, a technicality, they lost conformance on one of the lots for the square footage. If the inclusionary housing allows for a density bonus, why was the transfer development credit needed for the project?
We actually, the inclusionary housing ordinance just went into effect today. So it wasn't something that was project...
That triggers my next question. Yeah. Then why is Mr. Lerno being held under this new ordinance if his application was accepted prior?
Because the inclusionary housing ordinance was noticed, and Ted can help me with
yes,
the actual date.
I can answer that question. In 2005, the county put a public notice in the paper and actually had a board hearing that discussed the start of the inclusionary housing ordinance process. It's been a two-year process to actually get the ordinance through all the hearings, and it's adopted, and now it's in effect today. But that notice back in December of 2005 basically said that any projects that are submitted after that date would be affected by the ordinance, either at the time that they were approved.
But still, shouldn't they get the benefit of the ordinance also as far as the density? If they're affected by, if they fall under the ordinance, which is what I'm understanding, it seems like the purchase of the transfer development credit should be unnecessary.
And maybe Chuck can help me. So if they opt not, if they opt to build affordable housing unit on site, and that could function as their sixth lot, and opt not to buy a TDC,
I think that's
an option.
That may be possible.
If I'm understanding the question, are you talking about the existing house on the property now?
No,
I'm talking as if it were vacant land.
Right. I think they could have either option.
That's what I would think
if they
fall under the ordinance.
If they were to build on site, that they would be entitled.
Yes.
But
yes,
our assumption, our guess is they're not going to build on site.
The point is
they could
save the money that it's costing them to buy the TDC by simply
right.
exercising
yes.
the inclusionary housing option for the density
go.
Bonus to build a unit on site.
Correct.
And if the motive, if the goal is to motivate to provide inclusionary housing, it seems like that would be another benefit to the applicant to encourage an affordable housing unit to be built on site.
How much do you think the TDC cost?
It's a good choice for the applicant to make. It's really up to him at this point which way you want to go. But that's
I haven't read the fire chief's letter. Is there something?
He just, paragraph two,
mm-hmm.
he numbered two, just, do you have it in front of you there? If you want to read that real quick.
Oh, the tentative map, this is shown as being abandoned. I didn't see that as being abandoned on the tentative map. In fact, I saw it as being shown on the tentative map.
Well, it wasn't clear to me either.
My question
was... same question of what was happening there. I couldn't understand it from my reading, what was happening.
Right. In order to abandon the alley, they have to do it with a public hearing on the map, but I don't believe it's been... if that's their intent. Other than that, the alley would stay.
My follow-up question is, this alley proposed to be improved? Because I believe to the east, there is some sort of an alley approaching the project, rear of the project there.
Right.
Is this just a proposed easement on the map, or is it to be some sort of improvements done with fence setbacks and that type of thing?
Public Works, in this case, there's only a few alleys where Public Works has assumed maintenance control. Those exist in primarily up in San Miguel. In general, Public Works has no authority over alley. It's all private property, private access. We are not proposing any improvements to the alley.
So, but there's a proposal to abandon the alley. So,
well, that's what I'm trying to determine. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Will you just help us understand? So, are we looking at the alley on the north side or something on the east side? I don't see anything.
The alley that I see is on the north of the property, along the northerly property line. It doesn't. Let's see the width of the alley. Oh, thank you. Oh, yep. On a large scale, they're proposing to abandon their half of the alley.
Their half?
Yes, up to center line of the alley.
And the practical effect of that is what?
Well, the practical effect is they can do it at a public hearing, but it need to be noticed with the application. I might have to defer to Mr. Orton on that. And it looks like he's busy. Yeah. In general, the whole area needs to know, because everybody as part of this tract has legal rights to this alley. So to abandon a portion of the alley, as long as everybody in the tract has been notified, which would have been typical with the Brown Act for the notification, however, was it specifically addressed in the notification of the residents? But I need to have counsel.
But so the practical effect of abandoning the alley means people can pursue development in what was previously an easement
mm-hmm.
for the alley, correct?
They technically own it. It's just an easement over their property.
Right.
So
but it's an easement that's theoretically supposed to be kept open so that there's, for circulation purposes.
Sure. In general, alleys are not created anymore with more recent tract developments. These are things of older tracts from the turn of the century.
But we are seeing them with new urbanists kind of design development. So it's not something that we've universally agreed we don't want to have.
It appeared to be some overhead utility lines running down that easement also, so it's also access for the utility companies.
They would have to quit claim those easements. The easements would still hold, even though they're asking to take back the alley rights. They're wishing to condemn, help me out, Jim.
But it wouldn't affect. I would just add the map act says that any public streets or public easements to be left in effect after the subdivision shall be adequately delineated on the map. The filing of the final map, so we're the approval of the tentative map here and then final map later is filed, shall constitute abandonment of all streets and public easements not shown on the map. And so that this map that's part of this hearing does not show those easements on the map, and so a recording of it would abandon it.
So it's abandoned by default.
But by recording it. And then it says further that the provided a written notation of each abandonment is listed by reference to the recording data or other official records creating these public streets or easements and certified on the map by the clerk of the legislative body approving the map.
So,
and then there's a special provision that you're getting rid of public easements of other public agencies versus easements offered to the county.
So if it turns out, and I don't know that it will, but just so we know what our options are, if it turns out that this commission is not in favor of allowing that alley easement to be abandoned, what would we need to do? Revise this map to delineate
in,
the alley?
In the conditions of approval, you'd need to direct that it be shown on the map.
Okay.
Well, if I understand correctly, it would take a notice public hearing about the abandonment. Is that part of this notice? Because it wasn't read to us in the staff report.
The abandonment can take place as a result of what you're doing here.
Oh,
it doesn't
at a later
have
date.
To be separately noticed.
Right. I see. Would it come before us again for the abandonment?
Only for a conformity determination. For example, if the abandonment was not taking place on the map and it was filed separately, there would be a request.
Okay, and so if it's the half that's abandoned, mm-hmm. is the other half still functional then? I mean, it's wide enough on the other...
The other half is still there, and to be abandoned, you'd have to go through a separate abandonment proceeding.
Okay, but so for the purposes of the users on the north side, it would remain functional if indeed it's currently functional.
Well, if half an alley is functional.
There are only 20 feet.
I didn't visit the site, so I think Mr. White did.
I didn't get out and try to walk through there, but the alignment did look a little goofy to me from what the existing alley is to the east. But the reason I brought it up, it's in the fire chief's letter, and for some reason he would like to see the alley stay.
Yeah.
And it's probably for fire protection and again the utility companies. You know, I don't know if they've signed off on the tentative map to accept this abandonment.
The underlying easements would remain. Those don't go away with abandonment.
Oh, okay.
They're just taking away the rights of the people to use that portion of...
Like a roadway of sorts. Okay.
Exactly. And it's not the public. It's just the only people who are entitled to use that alley are the people in the original subdivision. That's my understanding.
So if as a result of Commissioner White's site visit, it is in fact borne out that there are encroachments on that easement, because you said there's fences and the lines are funny and stuff, then that's a potential enforcement action that... if people are encroaching on the alley, but that is not, you know, necessarily a precursor to abandonment because people have encroached on the easement.
They're only entitled to the center of the alley.
I don't have any specifics on where the fences are. It just looked a little strange to me. But again, my biggest concern was the fire chief's concern. And I had one more point, but I've lost my thought. Sorry.
Oh, okay, but while we're on that, I'm still confused because I'm looking at this and seeing... here, the alley to the north, but then there's reference to something on the east, which I'm not seeing or understanding.
What I'm saying is that alley continues to the east. It's an actual functioning alley to the east of this site.
Mm-hmm. Could you just trace that out for me? Because
you can kind of see it here on this, that just came up on the screen, those two lines pretty much shows. That's why the alignment doesn't look like
this.
I'm seeing
this here, right.
And then this is still
that's a functioning alley at this point.
Alley to the east.
Oh, I see, the east part
where it looks
on the
like
north
a wider
side.
Space
okay,
in
thank
there.
You. All right, thank you. Got it.
So Commissioner White, if I can respond. So after I've read Templeton Fire District, they're asking that you don't approve the abandonment and that you do have them improve their portion of the alley to some sort of standard that they can actually drive in the alley. That's my interpretation of what they said. If the abandonment has not already taken place, which it has not, it would be the fire department's desire to require the alley to be improved from the existing alley through this new project terminating at Eddy Street. Typically what we've done in Oceano also has a lot of alleys, Oceano Community Services District, if a project is proposed to take access through the alley to their site, their development in Oceano, either through a building permit or a subdivision, Oceano Community Service District has typically asked for the alley to be brought up to access road standards because they're used by the fire department, by garbage companies, etc., and by the applicant to provide access. And that they're what we usually do with them is we say you have to do your frontage to 20 feet back to the nearest county maintained road or publicly maintained road. We don't have them do the entire length of the alley, as might be inferred by Mr. Sullivan's letter here.
Well, I mean, what you're saying is that hasn't been our practice in Oceano, but there's nothing, I mean, if...
It's discretionary up
right,
to you.
Right,
yes.
Precisely. Okay.
I remember my other point. If we did if we did adhere to the fire chief's suggestions, this wouldn't affect their lot size for density because it's an easement. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
So presumably, just following up on that, if this easement wasn't abandoned, there would still be a fair amount of a building footprint space, and we're not looking at giving up a whole lot. Well, I guess the applicant could speak to that, who's asking for this.
Okay. Any other questions of staff?
Yes, I guess maybe while Mr. Marshall's on, we are looking at a curb, gutter, and sidewalk waiver, mm-hmm. and so I didn't think I understood the distinction there, but I would like you just to clarify why we're asking for that and looking to approve that.
Certainly. Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. The general area has been subdivided almost 100% right now, and there has been no curb, gutter, and sidewalk in this area. Title 22 requires subdivisions for residential to install curb, gutter, and sidewalk. It would be out of character of this neighborhood because this is the last enclave of subdivision potentially in this area. So to have just one piece of curb, gutter, and sidewalk out here would not make a lot of sense. It would not attach to anything, nor would it in the foreseeable future ever attach, be contiguous to other.
Well, typically when we're asked to waive things or, you know, reduce things, there's some specific authority for us to do that.
Why don't you let me take a look at the ordinance section that they're talking about, and maybe I could comment some more later.
Okay, that'd be great.
Okay, and just while Mr. Orton's doing that, maybe, so I just wanted to make sure I'm very clear, because in general I wouldn't support waiving this, but as I understand it, this is a requirement that kicks in at subdivision, and so if someone were to go to remodel or rebuild a house or put a house on a vacant lot, this requirement wouldn't kick in. So
absolutely not. This is zoned residential single family. Residential single family in Title 22 does not trigger curb, gutter, and sidewalk improvements with building permits.
Okay, so we're making the exception or looking to make it here just because this would be really the exception and just end and have no
and
purpose.
Just to clarify, I have no problem. It seems like a reasonable thing to do. I'm just concerned that we can sort of just unilaterally decide not to implement requirements of the ordinance just because we think it's a good idea. So if there's some specific legal authority that allows us to do that, I'm fine with doing that. Any other questions for staff? Okay, is the applicant here? Pamela Giardini is my first speaker. And are you representing the applicant, Ms. Giardini?
Yes, I am.
And how long do you think you'll need for your presentation?
Less than 10 minutes, hopefully.
Okay, well, we'll give you 10 and you can take as much of it as you like.
Good morning, Commissioners. Pamela Giardini with Planning Solutions, and I'm the agent for the applicant. I had brought PowerPoint pictures, but for some reason we're having technological problem today in presenting them. I was to address the area, the curb, gutter, and sidewalk. I had taken pictures of the neighborhood to show that there is no curb, gutter, and sidewalk in the neighborhood. This did go before Templeton Area Advisory Group. They were in support of the curb, gutter, and sidewalk
And
in support of the waiver.
Support of the waiver.
Just checking.
Thank you. Also, along Eddy Street, there is a very mature oak tree that, if you did this one in particular, put curb, gutter, and sidewalk in, that would be impacted. And so by not having curb, gutter, and sidewalk, that will preserve that tree, too.
Excuse me, Ms. Sardini, could we just go backwards? It looked like there was a sidewalk as we looked at that, as that slide.
No.
No? We're not looking straight back?
That's a walkway to the house, I believe.
It's just about there. Okay, thanks.
So that the picture you're seeing right now is Eddy Street, and from Los Tablas Road all the way down Eddy Street to past our project, so on the north-south route, on both sides there's no sidewalks. On the east-west route on Cayucas, there's no sidewalks. The nearest sidewalks are up at Los Tablas, and then down on Florence Street by the bridge, by a development that's on way on the other side of Toad Creek. And so there isn't any in the neighborhood. Okay. We don't know why my slides won't come up today, but they wouldn't. I do have a question for legal counsel on Ms. Christie's question about the alleyway. If I could just go back for a second. The subdivisions that took place in Templeton, or the Subdivision Map Act, or the subdivision of Templeton, is not recognized by the county planning department. If you look at the old layouts of Templeton, when they brought up like the residential single-family zoning, you'll see small lot subdivisions. The reason we're applying for this tract map is because the county doesn't recognize that old subdivision. So my question to legal counsel here today is that if you're not recognizing that old subdivision, then you wouldn't be recognizing the alleyway that was created by that old subdivision. And so then is the abandonment of the alleyway actually appropriate? And unfortunately, I'm not county counsel, and so I'm walking a thin line here because your side, although I hate to say it, has legal counsel present. I don't. And so if your board is going to determine that I can't abandon that alley, then I would prefer to refer this to continue it so I could get legal counsel. Because the ramifications on that, and I may not be correct, I was trying to think it through my head as this came through, is that in Templeton I need 7,500 square feet net for a subdivision, and so then I would need to apply for TDCs on all the lots if you weren't going to grant the abandonment. And obviously I'm thinking this through as all this has come up to us here, that it wasn't noticed, and the alley situation. And the alley, I mean, as you can see, we've been hit with a lot of changes from inclusionary subdivision to changes by public work, and we've been working with planning. They've been great with public works. We've agreed to all the changes, but the alleyway condition is something that Ms. Christie just brought up. My question is back to, is that alley actually exists since you're not recognizing the old subdivision? And I don't have an answer to that, and I don't have legal representation here from my applicant since that concern just came up here.
I'm curious, you said if
the TDC is being granted to go below the minimum parcel size, so I would need six.
Okay.
Possibly. And that the cost of TDCs and the question as to whether or not, because if the sunset clause has come in dealing with old subdivisions, even if this was recognizable, then I'm saying to your board, I'm not a legal counsel. These are questions I can't adequately agree to. And maybe I need to continue this. It really depends on if you're going to grant my subdivision the alleyway abandonment or not.
Okay, so we could get into that then with staff and council after your presentation. I think we understand that.
Okay.
I thought I'd ask that question prior to you coming up here, if the alley was not abandoned, if that would affect your minimum lot size for the, and I thought the answer was no.
Yeah, and Karen, I better jump in before it gets too far gone. The planning area standard states single-family lots shall be 7,500 square feet. It does not say net, so we interpret that to be gross.
Okay.
So the reduction, there just has to be less than a 5% or 10% reduction with the gross and net.
Okay.
So we believe all these lots will be fine.
Okay.
So that,
great.
Okay. So yeah. That includes easements and so forth.
Correct.
Yeah. Great. State though something in that we were not the conditions that we were given and under our noticing, or the county's noticing requirement, didn't include the condition to improve the alleyway. So I might, depending on what action you take here today too, would be, I might need to defer it to discuss with my client.
When you went to tag Ms. Giardini, did you have any discussion with the fire chief or the Templeton Advisory Group have any discussion on this?
The Templeton Area Advisory Group had no problems with the road abandonment, with the curb gutter and sidewalk waiver. Greg O'Sullivan, who's the Templeton Fire Department chief, was not at TAG.
So you did get a copy of his letter, though, and you didn't pursue that? Or?
I don't think I got a copy of his letter. It would have showed up in the staff report, and I didn't read it. I typically go to your conditions, because those are the things that are set in stone, and did not see that.
Okay.
And it's just, for the record, it's dated September 6th of 07. So it's not a recent letter. It's been in the record for a while.
And there's a possibility that I did and I don't remember,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, sure.
So.
Okay, anything else before you conclude?
No, I think that
okay.
Should conclude it. Thank you.
While you're up here, maybe, Ms. Giardini, probably I've read it, but just to clarify, I see two oaks on site. So would those be slated to be saved?
There was
a mention of that, but I don't remember whether those are conditioned for saving or
Holly
replacement.
Project manager, there is one oak tree, and at the time I thought there was two, but the other one is a fruit tree. So there's actually one oak tree, and the rest are fruit trees, ornamental, pine trees.
And so is that somehow conditioned to work around?
Standard mitigation if it was impacted, but if the future development impacts that tree, standard 2-to-1, 4-to-1, if it's impacted or removed, and being that there was no curb gutter and sidewalks, there was a good chance that it would be okay.
Okay, and that comes back to us then with the development, with an actual plan for development or not?
It would just come through a building permit. Since if the curb gutter and sidewalk waiver is granted, then the oak tree won't be impacted. And obviously, it is a amenity to the site that you don't want to take down when rebuilding a house. We have the option of phasing this map too. We may keep that house there, and so there's no reason to see that tree come down.
Okay. So could we condition saving that tree then, since the trees have come up for we've seen?
Well, I think within reason of public health and safety, should it get struck by lightning or, something like that. The thing is that to take the tree down, you do within an urban reserve line, you do need a tree permit, so maybe you could put a condition in that, that be brought to a higher level if it needs to be brought down.
So you'd be amenable to that?
Yeah.
Okay, our next speaker is Michael Wynn. And Mr. Wynn, you have 3 minutes.
I don't need 10 minutes, Madam
Chair. I said three. But it's the technical difficulty issue here. There you go.
There we go. In fact, I don't think I need 1 minute. I have no objections to this project and don't wish to speak to it. But I would like staff to turn to one of those pages where you have a correction of a staff report or emendation, if you would. Can you do that? Any one of them. That's fine. I don't know what you had on your screens when you looked at this, but I can tell you that it's illegible from the audience, and it's pretty much illegible on television as well. If you could circulate an internal memo.
If you're going to close the public hearing after Mr. Orton addresses my question regarding the legality of the subdivision and the legality of the alleyway, that then I'm not locked out of being asking to continue the item.
Sure. Yeah, you can.
Okay.
You can make that request at any time.
I did have one more question while you're there that mm-hmm. slipped by me. I was just curious where the sender site was for the transfer development credit.
It's the Bonheim Ranch is the sending site. So
out in Adelaide
North
area.
County.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Orton?
Yes, there are two issues that came up in Pam's testimony that I wanted to address. The first will be the curb gutter and sidewalk issue. Under Section 2103.010, factors to be considered when you approve a tentative map, ordinance compliance is one of them. And Title 22 in the curb gutter and sidewalk section requires that new subdivisions provide curb gutter and sidewalks. The subdivision ordinance, Title 21, has a section that allows for adjustments from the requirements above. And it's been referred to by the applicant as a waiver, but that's really not the appropriate term. It's either an adjustment or exception. And if she applies for it and you make particular findings, you can grant a waiver. So you do have the authority to grant, an adjustment from the requirement for curb gutter and sidewalk.
If you make the findings,
and I believe that Public Works and Mr. Mannion's on page 270, Public Works drafted a letter, and there's some findings in there that would be could be used for a waiver. So you do have the authority to adjust the requirements of the curb gutter and sidewalk under that adjustment section. The waiver of curb gutter and sidewalk is where somebody owns a lot, comes in, wants to construct a house on it, they're required to put curb gutter and sidewalk up front, and then they come in and ask the Director of Public Works to waive the requirement, and that's what doesn't come to the commission but goes staff to the board.
You know, typically the word adjustment, I think, gets applied to setbacks or height requirements or those sorts of things. Does it specifically?
Well, the section is entitled adjustments, and it says request for adjustments, and I'm reading from Title 21, to the standards set forth in 2103010, and that includes the reference to 22, which has the curb gutter and sidewalk, may be submitted in writing to the planning department at the time the applicant submits the application for land division, and then it's done through the process, and then it's got the requirements of findings that there are special circumstances affecting the subdivision. The granting adjustment will not be detrimental to traffic circulation system, public utility, storm drain, or other vehicle or pedestrian safety. The granting adjustment will not result in any unreasonable cost in the maintenance of the improvement, and the granting will not be detrimental nor degrade any portion of the improvement work involved in the subdivision. And so anyway, those are findings that are required under the adjustment section when you're adjusting the requirements.
Okay. Thanks for doing
that. The other issue I wanted to address is a little complicated, but the town of Templeton was recorded prior to May of 1893. What that means is, under the case law, the Supreme Court Gardner case versus County of Sonoma, since it's before the first Subdivision Map Act, recordation of that map did not create legal lots. What it did do was create a grid over which lots could be conveyed. So it was recorded, I believe, in 1888, the Town of Templeton map. It created this grid, and then lots could be deeded out. Once somebody deeded a lot out, there's a... they got a private easement over all the roads shown on the map. The roads include the alleys. So once those deeds went out, even though the map itself did not create legal lots, a deed of a lot created that lot as a legal lot, and it also gave a private easement over all the other roads and alleys shown on that map. And then there could be a common law acceptance of those roads, and their private rights of way as well as public.
Thank you.
But under the MAP Act, you can get rid of the public rights that are there.
Yes, I understand.
Through the abandonment proceeding.
Yes, makes total sense.
So is that what we should be thinking about, whether we want to in fact do that?
Well, that's what the request is by submitting a vesting 10-day map showing that it be abandoned. And I, you know, I guess staff has already addressed the issue of if you keep it as a street, how will that affect the lot size, the 7,500 square foot requirement?
Well, how much are we, how much, what is the easement, the, you know, what is that distance? How many feet? Was that 20 feet in, or what
I believe
are we talking
it's 10,
about?
And maybe Glenn has the big copy of the map there.
So we're talking about 10
it's
in
it's a
20-foot
wide feet. Alley, 10 feet either side.
So 10 feet in a lot depth of 100 or 70 or what?
Planning now has that
depth?
Tentative map.
150 is the dimension.
Is the depth. So
it's
we're talking
depth.
About 10 of 150, so 150 square feet.
So you'd still have 140, 50-foot depth
left.
Yeah.
Yes.
1/15 then of the depth, so not.
And to clarify, we're not asking for this to be improved, so they it would technically have their full 150.
Well, the fire department's asking for it to be improved.
Yes.
So we could consider that.
But if I understand, Mr. Marshall, there's no instrument for the county to maintain this improvement, is that correct?
We would not maintain this improvement. The homeowners, we probably have to set up a maintenance agreement with the homeowners to maintain the alley to the satisfaction of Templeton Fire Department.
But Chuck Stevens, that is typical of alleys, though. They're not maintained by the county.
That is typical, with a few exceptions.
Yeah. And I think we would offer, from planning's perspective, there's a real advantages to keeping alleys in terms of bringing access in from the rear, keeping cars off the street, providing an opportunity in many cases where trash pickup could occur and keeps cans off the street. It adds to the more traditional neighborhood character of the area, so certainly some advantages to consider.
It also adds to the walkability of a community.
So I guess my sense is if we took a straw poll here, we would all be leaning toward not abandoning the alley as requested. And we did hear the applicant saying then that she may need to bring this back to the property owner.
Well, I wish I could read the fire chief's mind. I should have called him. I know Mr. O'Sullivan. But just, it's an assumption that I probably shouldn't make, but in visiting the site, it looks like the alley to the east dead ends into this property, so I think he would want, what I'm assuming here is that he may want to continue that access through over to, I believe it is it Eddy Street or Cayuca Street?
Eddy
Street. So that might be what his goal is here. I don't, and I was hoping the applicant had some conversation with Chief O'Sullivan, but evidently he didn't. I don't know what the applicant's urgency might be or might not be, or if that's something they would rather do, take it back, bring it back because of this issue, or, you know,
It sounded like that was Ms. Hardini's intention, if that's the way we wanted to go. So my suggestion was if that's indeed the way a majority of us would be looking to go, maybe we need to ask whether she wants to continue that now rather than spending more time.
Well, I'll add that a continuance would also allow us to formalize the findings for the adjustment to the curb, gutter, and sidewalk, which I think we need to be mindful of.
Yeah, I just want to say I'm not necessarily, you know, committed to keeping that alley, but I'm always concerned when I hear from fire police that there's some utilities issue. So it's of concern to me. I would like to have that answered.
So it sounds like we're moving generally toward continuance. And if Ms. Giardini would like to, we'll be talking about dates probably. So
I think that if we could continue it on calendar, just in case this can get resolved within the next 2 weeks or the next available time, because obviously I'm not going to agree with Mr. Horton's interpretation, and so I do want to go to council because I think the grid pattern he's laying out hasn't been tried in courts, and so unless it's been tried in courts and upheld in an appellate court, it doesn't become law. And that's not for me to argue.
That's
why we have lawyers.
Well, and that's what the judicial branch is for.
Right. and then it comes down to whether or not, but the, how it impacts me, us or the development is whether or not you can require to do improvements on it and the gross net and all that kind of stuff. So what I'd like to do is if we can continue it on calendar, that way if it can be resolved fairly quickly, we have a date certain. If not, then I could come back to you at that time and tell you that we're still...
Other issues, or should we try to hammer as many of those out now?
Yeah, let's try to deal with some of the other issues, too, because then if staff needs time to add some conditions and the applicant needs to think them through, we may as well have them on the table.
The one that's still hanging out there for me is the inclusionary housing. With that requirement, I'm confused if the applicant's required to purchase a development transfer credit or transfer development credit. It doesn't seem that they should be required to do that if we have the inclusionary housing requirement.
Well, I think, assuming this is going to get continued, that part of the continuation and the discussions that take place during that continuation will be between Ms. Giardini and her client and county staff about whether or not it may, in fact, be more advantageous for your client to exercise the inclusionary housing provision rather than purchasing the TDC. It gets you to the same place through a different route. But I think they need to do one or the other in order to get around that minimum lot size. So it's just something, it's out there if you want to explore it. That would be a great time for you to do it. Dates, Mr. Stevenson?
February 11th probably would be, that's the soonest, and there's some time available on that. After that,
how much time do we have on February 11th?
We have, there's 105 minutes dedicated so far. You have a total of 375 available, so there's plenty of time on that.
Well, that February 11th sounds good then. I see Ms. Giardini's in accordance, so. Do we have a motion to continue to February 11th?
Just before that motion gets made, I did have a couple of other items. Just so I would be looking to staff, I think that was clear that we all agreed that to add the findings then for the curb gutter and sidewalk adjustment. I think those were written on Mr. Mannion's letter but not carried over to the project findings. So did we all agree we wanted to see those added in? Okay. And then if Ms. Hardini has agreed to add in the oak sort of condition to save the oak if possible, we may as well get that in there. So looks like it wouldn't be impacted, and that's agreed on, so we may as well get that in the hard conditions. And the trail potential came up and then got dropped, and so I didn't know whether the commissioners wanted to discuss that anymore. There was mention that originally there was mention of a trail passing through this property, but then Parks dropped it, and so you had brought that up, so I wanted to bring that back to your attention.
Given the lateness of the hour and the length of the agenda, maybe staff can just double-check with Parks Department and indicate that the commission is interested in the question, and if there's any potential there for an improvement, we'd be interested in hearing from them.
And I think, do we have a letter from them already? I mean, there was some note that they did drop that, so it hasn't been addressed.
There is a letter.
Could be addressed more thoroughly. Don't we have a letter
page
in here?
Page 2-78 of your staff report from Sean Cooper.
Okay, so I think we just didn't need to deal with that since it was, the question was
raised. He's just looking for Quimby fees.
Yeah,
you know,
I
thought we just were going to leave that condition in because it says if applicable, and so if there ever was going to be a trail, there's a condition in there, and if there's not going to be one, it's going to be ignored.
That sounds like an easy way through.
Are people comfortable with that?
Sure.
Since that had come up, that we would just leave that.
Staff, you don't want staff to check with Parks.
You know, if staff wants to check with Parks, they can. But it sounds like we're probably going to leave that in. We could. More communication is better than less. Okay.
Did you want staff to also be contacting the fire chief of Templeton District so that?
I would assume that would be what you guys would do. So,
right.
Yeah, I don't think.
Well, I was just thinking of the comments of Commissioner White.
Yes, thank you.
That could be brought back in through the public hearing process.
Thank you. That was my suggestion before any motion. Thank you.
Okay, that handled all of my other notes.
There. Okay, so I think staff has a pretty comprehensive list of issues to look into. Do we have a motion to continue to February 11th?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would make a motion that we continue the tentative tract map application of 2933 to February 11th, 2009.
On calendar.
on calendar.
Yeah,
that's how you say it.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries to February 11th. It's now 11:56. We have a 12 o'clock lunch break. I guess, Ellie, you could read item three, read the item, and we could open it and then break for lunch.
Shall we just wait and read it?
Yeah. Would you rather do it that way?
Try to be better.
It's just cleaner for me.
Oh, okay, perfect. Then that's what we'll do. So we'll break for lunch, and we'll reconvene at 1:30.
Item 3 is a hearing to consider a request by R.L. The proposed project is located in commercial retail land use category and is located in the Salinas River planning area. Here we have a look at the site plan, and it's pretty washed out. I apologize for that. And the existing building there is right up against Main Street, and the parking lot is in the back. This is an old aerial image of the site plan, or the site area. This slide shows some pictures of what is existing there, what the buildings looked like a few months ago. The buildings are, I believe Mr. Fisher said, ready for final next week, perhaps. And staff took a recommendation, and I hope the audience members can see the changes.
Did you change them to yellow during the lunch break?
So
noted, Mr. Wynn. One
behalf.
Person can make a difference, Mr. Wynn.
So with that, staff would, as Jim Morton suggested, we would like to make a change, a modification to condition 18. And again, at the end of the first sentence on...
No, Ms. Phipps, before you go on, is the change that you're making is what is described in the amended staff report that we have in our black binders, so we're all looking at the same piece of paper.
Okay, we're good with that.
Is that, or, yes. Or are you proposing to change that as well?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't need to read it in the record then?
No, we need to read it in the record, but I wanted to make sure all the commissioners are looking at the right document,
Okay. Because
we effectively have two staff reports for this, so... You're working off of the amended staff report that's in our binders right now, which is page 7.
Okay.
Okay.
And condition 18 will now read, the developer shall submit proposed covenants, conditions, and restrictions for the subdivision to the County Department Planning and Building for review and approval and recordation along with the map, period. The CC&Rs shall provide for the establishment at a minimum the following provisions. A. If a fence drainage basin is required, ongoing maintenance of the drainage basin fencing in perpetuity. Condition B, notification to prospective buyers that an additional map sheet was recorded with a final parcel, or track map. The restrictions, conditions, and standards set forth in the additional map sheet apply to future development. It is the responsibility of the prospective buyers to read the information contained on the additional map sheet. And I have a hard copy for the clerk that I'd like to submit. I also know Mr. Marshall has some new revisions to add to the staff report.
Chair Christie, Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. Also looking at your amended staff report. I was going to say let's get rid of condition 5H, but I think I will leave that alone. And that had to do with trail plans. But based on our last conversation, we shall not move that. Page 6 of the revised staff report, I'd like to modify condition 9. Basically, strike condition 9 as it's read and replace it with the following. The project shall comply with the requirements of the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System Phase 1 and or Phase 2 Stormwater Program and the county's stormwater pollution control and discharge ordinance. That's a stock condition that we put on all projects. On page 7 of the revised staff report, I'd like to modify condition 13 to say all add existing and new electric and telephone lines shall be installed underground and strike or overhead, and service laterals be stubbed to each lot. So the new condition would read, all existing and new electric telephone lines shall be installed underground and service laterals shall be stubbed to each lot. I'd like to add a new condition 17C to the additional map sheet. That would state, if a drainage plan is required, that the owners of all lots are responsible for ongoing maintenance of drainage plant, of the drainage basin, adjacent landscaping in a viable condition on a continuing basis into perpetuity. The basin area shall be indicated as a building restriction. Add a condition 17D, if improvements are bonded for, all public improvements, road, drainage, and utilities shall be completed prior to occupancy of any new structure. And then on the same page 7, condition 18, I'd like to add a condition 18C and 18D. 18C would read, if a drainage basin is required, ongoing maintenance of the drainage basin, adjacent landscaping, and a viable condition on a continuing basis into perpetuity. And 18D would be maintenance of all access road and parking lots within the subdivision in perpetuity. And those would be my recommended changes. And those are also, that's part of the handout that I gave out this morning.
Okay, great. Ms. Phipps, do you have more to add, or does that conclude your presentation?
With that, staff would like to conclude the presentation, and staff is requesting approval of the vesting tentative parcel map and conditional use permit based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and C and the condition.
Not a reason to do so.
Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. I don't know the fire code well enough, nor what the building department does with their plan check, so I would defer to council on this, but I don't see there would be a problem adding this to the CCNRs, maintenance of the fire system.
I don't see a problem adding it there, if you wish.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. I think that would satisfy the fire chief. And
so
then I had...
Before we go on from that, so now under fire protection on page 3.6 and 3.7 of the original staff report, which I guess we shouldn't be working off the original staff report at this
no,
point, right?
That's good.
It's hard because we make all our notes on that.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know
yeah.
it is. Mm. But since we made our newest notes on the changed one, let's
so I actually don't see that that's tracking fire protection.
I think we were in
oh, there it is.
CCNR?
It's on page 7.
Seven yeah.
It's, so it's page 7 of the new staff report under condition 16. Will we renumber that so that what's currently there is A, and then we'll add a B for the maintenance of the sprinkler systems? Is that the way to do that? Or should we just tag it on at the end? Does staff have a preference?
I think we're suggesting adding it to the CCNRs, because that would be the legal agreement.
And not put it in the conditions at all?
Well, the condition, this condition, the fire condition, is saying you have to meet that fire letter.
It was a CCNR recommended change or addition.
So we'll reference it under fire protection and add it to the CCNRs.
I don't think you need to add it to 16 for the fire protection. I think it's
okay. So where is staff proposing to insert that then?
CCNR.
18E, I think, would be a, if Ms. Knoll was, which would be part of the CCNRs.
The old 16 is going to remain, right?
The old 16
yeah.
will remain.
Okay.
Okay, I hate to be a pain, but if I'm confused, others might be as well. I don't have the entire staff report in the black binder. All I have are the conditions, which we're not going to add it to. And then I have an email.
We are. On page 7, 18, that's the CCNR. So
oh, I get
just
it.
Adding it to the CCNR section on top
okay.
of our new C and D, we're adding this E.
Got it. Okay. Okay, Mr. White.
The other question I had was on the, again, the old staff report 3-23. There's a letter, a will serve letter from Templeton Community Services District. And I had a question about there's two water and sewers available, and I didn't know if that's sufficient for the 12-unit condominium, if there would need to be 12 required for that.
Staff did try to contact the TCSD yesterday afternoon. We were unable to talk with them directly, but the agent, Mr. Fisher here, will be able to better address that question.
Okay, thank you.
Other commissioners have questions for staff?
A general question, I guess, maybe the applicant can also help address. I guess it's in two parts, really. One, how this is being a commercial condo conversion. I see something about the new inclusionary housing, I guess because this has to pay maybe the linkage fees for that, or is this somehow subject to that? Didn't I see some inclusionary housing the new inclusionary housing ordinance. So is this subject to the new commercial linkage fees?
This was referred to Dana and Ted Bench, and they reviewed the staff report, and there was no changes.
I believe because it's existing construction, it did not apply. It's only to new construction.
Okay, so it wouldn't.
This is just conversion of
as the conversion. Okay, and so that's the second part of my question then. We've seen a couple projects that have come in initially as rental projects, and it's become an issue in terms of housing units conversion and our housing condo conversion ordinance. So I'm curious, I guess the applicant will answer the question of why this comes in after the initial permit for a rental complex, or if there's some advantage seen in doing it as a sort of two-part process.
Karen, not with staff, we wouldn't look at the project any differently if it came in initially as a condominium, commercial condominium. So maybe the applicant can explain why the steps were taken in this manner to process this one.
You're certain then that nothing's lost in this sort of two-part process?
I don't believe so.
As opposed to an initial process?
No.
Okay, thank you.
And I'd just like to follow up on one point that Commissioner Wyatt made with respect to the linkage fees. I want to make certain that we're not missing an opportunity to provide some additional funds for our affordable housing program. And what we understood from the previous item was that any proposal that came in after that notice was posted in 2005 would be subject to the ordinance. That takes care of the question. But if it's a judgment call,
yeah, I do not believe it's a staff interpretation. I believe it's a staff interpretation of the new ordinance that clearly states it's exempt.
Okay.
But I'll try to find
terrific.
That.
Terrific. Thanks. Any other questions from staff before we go to the or for staff before we go to the applicant?
I have questions also about water, but Commissioner White's raised them, and sounds like the applicant's prepared to address
okay.
them.
Okay. So, is the applicant in the audience today?
Yes.
Are you Richard Fisher?
Yes.
Welcome, Mr. Fisher. We typically give applicants 10 minutes to make their presentation. Will that be sufficient?
My name's Richard Fisher. I have no presentation other than to answer your questions.
Okay. That makes it easy.
The question on why it was converted, we started this project back quite a while ago in 03 and finally got it out of the ground. And what we're finding is, as we have built several of these before, is that the tenants would like to purchase their units. They're small units, 450 to 900 square feet, and there would be individual business owners, and so we started the process of the conversion to the condos after it was built. I mean, not after it was built, but during the building process when we started talking to the people that wanted to occupy it. So we have approximately three right now that will lease it, and their primary goal is to own one of the units rather than paying rent over a long period of time.
Okay. Folks had questions about the water. Who wants to step in there?
I just had a question about the TCSD. Will serve. Will you need to acquire 12 waters and 12 sewer units in order to have the 12-unit condominium?
I have... The use of it doesn't change based upon condominiums, and the use of a commercial unit is different than a residential. If you say a residential unit requires one unit of water, several sources, including a letter from the Wallace Group, who is a consultant to the TCSD, the general is for general small commercial and retail office buildings is about 0.15 water equivalencies, where one is that of the single family home. And this would bring to 1.25 using that as the number of water units required. There was one existing water unit there on the site, and we retrofitted for a full one unit of single-family house, a water unit. So that brings us somewhere in the range of 1.75 by the Wallace Group to our calculation of 2. The uses don't change. We're going to have the same people in there. The advantage to having the individual water meters controlled by the city or TCSD is that they can, when somebody purchases one of the units, they have to go in and apply for the water meter to be changed to their individual name. And at that point, the TCSD has some control over who goes in there. In other words, if you're going to put a laundromat in or a restaurant or something like that, there'll be additional water units required of those people going in at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. But one of the things I was trying to understand is if this is something that will need to be added to the CCNRs also for a practical standpoint as far as how you're going to pay for the water. Will that be an association that pays for the water?
No, the association will basically, it'll either be metered to the association or it will be metered to the individual tenants depending upon what the Templeton Service District chooses to put in. Each unit has its own service to a manifold out in front. So it can go either way at any time.
Oh, I see. So you have made the construction provisions to allow for separate metering and
right.
Oh,
right.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
And all that the services district is requiring is the two meters to service because of the quantity of water being used.
Right. If it's going into a rental position, then they would normally have the renters could put in their individual meters, or whoever the owners are who would be able to put in their meter.
One more question. Are the two meters required? Is one a landscape meter, or are two required because of the volume of anticipated use?
No, one meter that's in there is being the existing meter to, depending upon the use that's going to be put in there,
right.
Apply for service. The water meter's already there. It's just
right.
A matter of service. If it's going to be a one-person or two-person office, they're going to use a whole lot less than 0.5, but if it's going to be a restaurant or a laundromat or something, then they're going to use a whole lot more than one. And if that use wants to go in there and is allowed in there by the county, then they would individually apply to the Templeton Service District for and have to retrofit or do whatever Templeton Service District dictates to them to be able to operate that use in that particular unit.
Right. Okay. So since you've provided the options then
yes,
for them,
the option
they can figure
there.
That out how to do that
you're right.
Adequately. Okay. Thank you. Any more questions? Commissioner Wyatt?
As far as Public Works, as far as Public Works' comments, we have adequately taken care of that. There is no basin on site. We put in a new drainage system down 2nd Street to handle all the water coming into that whole area down there. So and it does meet the environmental standards, which will be now standard language in everything you're getting. The drainage is all set to go through some kind of a landscape filtering system.
And so you heard Mr. Marshall's changes then to the conditions?
Yes,
and
I agree.
Familiar
that's
and
fine.
All of
we are in full compliance.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
If we
thank
have
you.
Any more questions, we'll let you know. So with that, I'll close the public testimony part of this hearing and bring it back to staff and the commission.
Karen, the only comment I had was back on the inclusionary housing ordinance, and it specifically states that the ordinance applies to development, commercial or industrial development, and we believe this is not considered new development because it's a condominium.
So it's staff's opinion that a condominium conversion does not meet the definition of development.
Correct.
Well, there's something about residential condominiums.
Yeah, residential.
Specifically in here as opposed to commercial.
Right.
So there is some distinction drawn somewhere. I'm just curious what staff's interpretation would be if this were a residential condominium conversion.
There's a specific exclusion for that in the ordinance.
Okay. Very good then. And what's the will of the commission on this item? Comments? Concerns? Motions?
Commissioner Christie, Glenn Marshall with Public Works. We've got an added condition 18E that deals with the fire department's safety and perpetual maintenance of the fire system.
You've got the language for that?
We do.
Okay, and would you like to read that into the record?
Certainly. So
this is 18E?
This will be on your revised staff report, page 7. Condition 18E is in Edward. Be included requiring maintenance of the fire protection systems as required by the Templeton Fire Department.
Does that meet your concerns, Commissioner?
I'm sorry, could I hear that one more time?
Certainly. Condition 18E would read, a provision shall be included requiring maintenance of the fire protection systems as required by the Templeton Fire Department.
In the CCNR?
In the CCNR. This would be CCNR, condition 18E.
Therefore, if they have a separate agreement established, the CCNRs could reference it. But it gives them flexibility how to set it up and have it done. But it has to be included in CCNRs before the map will record.
Well, thank you, because that was where my wheels were turning wild. Does that do what the separate document would do, what I was concerned about? Thank you very much.
Okay, with that, I think we're ready to entertain a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that we approve the vesting tentative parcel map SUB 2008-0008-CO08-0122 and conditional use permit based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and C and the conditions as modified listed in Exhibit B and D.
Second.
Second.
And I'm presuming that when you were speaking of the modified conditions, that you agree with staff's proposal to retain the condition that had previously been suggested to remove regarding the trails plan. So
that's
that condition that 5 is going to remain
that,
in.
That's correct.
Okay. Roll call.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Melskow?
Yes.
Chairperson Chris,
thank you.
Not yet. Oh, there we go.
The project before you is a request by Scott Adams and Kathy Bolin to construct a mini storage project. The project includes approximately 88,000 square feet of mini storage space, a 1,900 square foot car wash, an office that's approximately 492 square feet, a 1,200 square foot caretaker's unit, and also a drainage basin and landscaping that goes along with the project. The project is located within the South County. It's in the Callender Garrett area, which is off of Highway 1 near Sheridan Road. It is within the industrial land use category and within the coastal zone and coastal appealable area. It is surrounded by industrial zoning. The project or property directly to the west has an existing mini storage project, and the applicant has designed this to fit within the design similar to that project, and we'll see a few pictures of that. And the property directly to the east is also an industrial property. And the property to the south is also industrial, and we have a development proposed on that larger property to the south there. You can see my cursor, which includes RV storage in that area, which will come to the Planning Commission at a later date. There is residential suburban zoning, which is across Highway 1, which includes larger lot residences. This is the entire site plan. I had to squeeze it in so we could see it in one view here because it's hard to see it all on one screen. But it's essentially 16 buildings. The caretaker residence is up towards the front on Highway 1, which is on the right of your screen. So west is looking up here in this view. There's the basin, and there's landscaping and walls in the front of the property for visual and noise barriers, which I'll talk about in a little bit, and also landscape buffers, which provides a 50-foot setback before we see any development for the site. All of the structures are single-story. They are metal structures, similar to the typical mini-storage units, and we'll see some pictures of the neighboring property, which is similar to what the applicant is proposing here, with some different colors. But they're all single-story. And the caretaker unit, again, is our elevations here on the front. And at the top of the screen, that's the typical mini storage elevation.
It's off center. Well, you're here on that rendering. I see on page 48 an advisory council suggestion that buildings parallel to Willow would be more compatible with surrounding parcels. Were those buildings originally perpendicular to Willow and got moved to be parallel?
Well, the caretaker unit's always been parallel.
That has.
So
been.
It's always the frontage, and I have another slide here with a picture of this color board, which shows the entire front elevation. The caretaker and office is what is parallel to the road, and that's what you're going to see first. But it's a setback 50 feet, and in front of that, we're going to have some retaining walls and heavy landscape barrier in front of that, so it's really not going to be too visible anyway, because of noise barriers. So, yes, they are parallel to the road. And again, this is the elevation on the front. These buildings, this is the car wash building, which right now it's parallel to the front, and as well as this is the caretaker and office, which is parallel to Highway 1. This is this color board that we have. I just took a picture of it and put it in the PowerPoint for everybody to be able to see. But the walls contain a combination of block walls of different colors and wrought iron to break it up. The walls are stepping, and they get taller as we get to the east, adjacent to the neighboring mini storage project. These are some site photos that I took. This view is looking southwest. The property is currently planted in strawberries. The neighbor, just their drainage area in the front, which this one will be fairly similar to. This is looking directly south from Highway 1. And this is Highway 1 looking east. Staff has received concerns from some of the neighbors in the area with regards to, more specifically, the car wash. And concerns have included water usage, noise, and traffic, and neighborhood issues with the residential units across Highway 1. These issues have been discussed in the environmental document. The applicant is proposing to use a recycled water system with this car wash, which if folks in the area choose to use this car wash rather than their hose, it actually could be a benefit to the water table, which we hope that people will use this type of facility because not only is it reclaimed water, but they're also capturing the wastewater and filtering it rather than it just going directly onto the ground and into the creeks. Also included is mitigation measures are for noise, vegetative barriers, and noise walls. And again, with traffic, Caltrans has asked that they include a turn lane to mitigate those impacts for high-speed traffic on Highway 1 so that folks have a safe way to turn and not be sitting in the lane. And another note, the residential properties are the closest residence other than the caretakers, approximately 200 feet away. So noise impacts, as discussed in the noise study that was conducted, basically said that there is going to be no impact to the residential units to the north from the car wash. The noise analysis actually said that the ambient levels within the area today because of Willow Road are above what our ordinance requires. So what we have to look at in our analysis is we don't want to make that basically 1 dB higher than what it is now. So that's what the noise study has analyzed, and it's found to be there are no significant environmental impacts with noise. Another issue is, of course, the property contains strawberries. It has an existing ag use. However, it is surrounded by industrial development, and it's zoned industrial. And our Ag Commissioner's office has sent us a referral saying that they have no impacts, no negative impacts to ag. So that is what we are relying on for our recommendation. And before I make my recommendation, I have a couple housekeeping items in the staff report. I'll just go specifically to the page 4-2 under the height. It should actually be 18 feet is what they're proposing, and that's in the environmental document, and it says 15 in the staff report. So I believe that the car wash is actually going up to 18. So I want to change 15 to 18 under the height on page 4-2. And again on page 4-10, that would be under Exhibit B in the conditions of approval. 1B would be changed to 18 feet for the height again. And we wanted to add some language to condition number 21, which is on page 4-13. And this is specifically relating to the car wash and the reclaimed water system. What we would like to do is add some additional language for the filtering of the water, if some of the water does and most likely will go back into their leach system. We want to make sure it's filtered properly. So on condition 21, we want to add a sentence to the end of it, and I can read that into the record. I'll just read the additional sentence. This County Division of Environmental Health shall review the treatment system so that the wastewater from the car wash does not result in groundwater quality impacts. And those were all of the changes that I had. So with that, staff recommends that your commission adopt the mitigated negative declaration and approve the development plan coastal development permit DRC 2005-00144 based on the conditions or findings in Exhibit A and conditions in Exhibit B. I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Hofstetter. This is your district, Gene.
Okay. I've got a question of Public Works. I'm looking at page 4-17.
There, that would be the best alternative. Split it down the property line. Other than that, I wouldn't see a problem, especially with a center left turn lane, the continuous way, to allow for a second driveway there. But Caltrans really has a final determination on that.
Okay, so you think that the other two parcels would use one entrance and this one would have its own?
I think that might be a requirement of development of those other two parcels by Caltrans.
Mm-hmm. And then the industrial to the rear of this project then would enter on, I think that's Albert's Way, the parcels that go to the south.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's a project, a proposed project. They'll be taking access off Sheraton. Is that the project to the south of this, or the parcel to the south of this
project? Yeah, but then there's some more parcels further to the east that would probably...
Those parcels to the east, one is an approved track, the Hernandez track, I can't remember the track number. They're taking access to Highway 1 off of Arriba Place to the south.
Okay.
And they will be putting in a road. Actually, that's a good point. They'll be putting a north-south road along the their westerly property line.
Okay.
And that will be a public road. And so actually with the development of the parcel directly east of the subject parcel, they may be, that road may be in, and they could take access to that new road at that time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's all my questions I have right at the moment.
I caught one more change really quickly on page 4-9. Finding C should reference Title 23, not Title 22.
So. Good catch. Other questions for staff?
I just had a couple questions, maybe for staff or maybe for the applicant or somebody else. One of them is really minor. It's about parking for visitors to the mini storage. I mean, I see parking for the caretaker and office manager, but when people go to mini storages, they have to sign up for their unit, and they have to park somewhere. Are they expected to park there? Are they expected to park? I couldn't really read the tiny...
Yes, Ryan Hostetter, planning staff. The ordinance doesn't require visitor parking for mini storage units. It does require the office space. However, in working with the applicant, there's probably space for that to be added. We can ask them. That can be added into the conditions.
Yeah, I know. I checked the ordinance, and you're right. It isn't required, but it's a practical matter. People are going to end up being parked in the car wash or someplace where there isn't really parking, and Caltrans or somebody will get mad. And the other question is about water reclamation systems, actually a couple questions about water. I don't know really much anything much about these at all. So it's, when you say shall reclaim 80% or more, does that mean that the best they can usually do is about 80%? I mean, there aren't some out there that do 95%. We're just giving them the leeway. Or
I don't know if there is a better system out there. It is quite possible.
I mean, it just seems to me that the best, if you're talking about car washes, you'd want the one that would reclaim the most, because obviously that's what they're doing, is using a lot of water. On the other hand, my other question would relate to the fact that since it is being used for strawberries now, do you have any comparison about how much water is used for growing strawberries as opposed to car washes?
What we have figured out is a comparison to residential, and annually this car wash is going to use about a third of what one residence would use with this recycled water system. So, but in comparing to strawberries, I do not have that number.
All right. And I had one other question, but I can't remember what it was, so I'm sure I'll figure it out.
Well, while you're thinking, we could go to staff report page 4-8, and just noting community advisory comments. So just wanted to make sure these are incorporated in the project. We see a couple of suggestions from advisory council. Sufficient landscaping for screening, I'm sure we see that's been added. And the recirculating water has been added. So still, I'm a little confused about the note that buildings parallel to Willow Road would be more compatible with surrounding projects. We see the front building that shows is parallel. So was the hope, do you suppose, that all of the storage units, even though they're not visible, be parallel? Or
honestly, I'm not sure what their intent was, if it's for all the buildings or for the couple in the front. Spoke with LJ Hansen on the phone a while back about this project, and I don't see her in the audience. She was planning on coming, and she helps represent them, but I can't answer that for you. I'm sorry.
Okay, because I was curious about that intent. I believe it's been met if the front buildings that show are indeed parallel. Probably the rear buildings don't matter too much if it's a visual issue. after that... improved architectural aesthetics.
Applicant, in working with the community, has agreed that would be an appropriate time frame.
Okay. So we can hear maybe more from him on that, since no one else is here to clarify, I guess, just what they were asking for. And an encroachment permit from Caltrans has already been acquired. Okay, thanks.
I remember my one question. Other question. It's kind of like a strawberry question. It's just one of those things. Do you have any idea what the nearest car wash is to this area, if there are any?
You know, I don't. Perhaps the applicant can help.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Hofstetter, could you put the aerial back up on the screen for us, please? So as I'm looking at this, I'm looking at the development to the left. I'm not sure how that translates if you're
west.
Sitting in the audience. Okay, west. Is that the existing mini storage facility?
Yes.
Okay. And then to the right, it looks like, I can't tell if that's a darker irrigation, is it
there
soil
is a,
or if that's
a... There is a parcel map approved on that property about 4 years ago now. It's an industrial parcel map, so they're divided up as smaller industrial properties.
There are two parcels there.
Two in the front and then, yes, one in the rear that has an existing industrial building on it.
Okay. So is this a current aerial image?
Within 2 years or a year and a half now, almost 2 years actually. This
so
aerial.
is there new development on that site now that's not depicted
no.
currently? Okay. And then moving further to the east, then we've got that big green parcel with
mm-hmm.
the arc to it. You said there was a parcel map.
That's zone residential suburban.
Okay.
Oh, which parcel are you referring to?
The
on
one
the
with
curve.
The big arcing curve
okay.
to it that's
mm-hmm.
in green. Sort of.
Right
and then, I guess, to the south below that,
mm-hmm.
what's the disposition of that?
That was recently approved for, it's a residential suburban, and it contains a tract map that was just recently approved by the Board of Supervisors.
It makes my heart heavy to see all that agricultural soil being never to be turned over for crops again. Question. This is in the coastal appealable zone, according to the staff report.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, there's a difference between the coastal zone and what's appealable. So, what in particular makes this project appealable?
It's between the first public road and the
okay.
ocean here.
And the first public road in
Highway
this instance
one.
Being Highway 1.
Mm-hmm.
So, everything west of Highway 1 in this section. Of the, okay.
In this Callender Garrett area, yes.
Okay. I had some questions about the noise situation. On page 4-3, it's in the staff report, and you reiterated that this area is already above the county standard in terms of ambient noise. And so the crux of the matter here is whether or not the car wash would raise that more than 1 dB. I'm assuming dB stands for decibel? I don't know.
Yes.
Okay. So then it goes on, the staff report goes on to talk about the operation of the vacuum stations and when they would be operated, etc., but it never really makes a definitive statement that operation of the vacuum stations would not, in fact, raise the noise level by 1 decibel, unless I've missed it somewhere, but I read it a couple times trying to find it.
We can go to our mitigated negative declaration that's proposed, and under the conclusion, that's on page 4-39. So there was to reduce noise-related impacts to the caretaker. Expected that the retaining wall would result in considerable reduction in exterior transportation-related noise. That's noise from Highway 1 to the caretaker, resulting in potential impacts that are less than significant.
But I guess I'm not quite sure. This is a very technical, obviously, an analysis of the noise issues because it was done by a noise consultant.
It seems.
But go ahead, Carolyn.
It seems like on the left-hand side on page 4-38, it talks about the project. I mean, the existing background noise levels at 67.8 and 83, two different measurements. And then up there on the top of page 4-39, it talks about the use of the vacuum units would be 47.1. So I think the point is that the 47.1 is way below 67.8 and 83.
But that's not really the question.
So they wouldn't go up. I mean, if the amount of noise that they produce is lower than what's there already, then they aren't raising it 1 decibel more than 67.8.
The county standard is 50 decibels is the max. And with this project, the noise study found that it would result in 47.1. So it's saying that it's under the max before we have to get into mitigation for, that's for the residences across mm-hmm. the highway. So it's below the max.
And so if it's below the max, then is that below the max after the mitigation measures have been implemented? Because
no,
if
this
it's below
is,
the max,
below
why
the
do we
max.
Need mitigation
it's
measures?
It's below the max, and we don't need mitigation measures for the vacuums on the residences across the highway.
But there's mitigations to
the
reduce...
The mitigations are for the caretaker
oh, for the
and from
unit.
The highway noise to the caretaker.
Okay, okay. Okay, that pretty much concludes my questions. I'm interested to hear some of the water information from the applicant and the members of the public. But if there are no more questions of staff, we'll go to the applicant, who is Mike Bertucci.
You get an A for pronunciation.
Will 10 minutes be sufficient? Okay.
I'm Mike Bertuccini with EDA Design Professionals, 1998 Santa Barbara Street, San Luis Obispo, California, representing the property owner and developer of the mini storage as the civil engineers and surveyors. I wrote down some notes while you guys discussed and made some comments, but first I'd like to talk about the front end and the landscaping just to qualify that. The landscaping we proposed out there is a little bit different than next door. Next door there's a straight row of trees. We're looking for a landscaping configuration that adds some depth from the right-of-way back to the buildings. It kind of breaks things up that way and gives you a more interesting effect. That's why our wall has some vertical articulation on it, so the blocks are not just a big, long, straight wall. So you're also not just looking at the project but driving down the road. When you look to the left or the right to see the project, depending on the direction you're traveling, you'll see a more interesting landscape than just a straight row of trees to screen some commercial buildings. So that was our goal behind that. It also helps break up the walls. We have a berm that's landscaped out front that helps hide some of that as well. So that was our goal, and just a clarification and a little additional information on the landscaping. Back to what Eugene had mentioned about limited access, county code is, you know, requires limited, trying to limit access to Highway 1, except when Highway 1 is the only point of entry to the property. So if we had a secondary access, then we would be required to use that if there was an additional alley or street behind that. At this time, we don't have a second road available to us, but the property to the east, when the Arriva property and the Murphy property develop and build that commercial street connecting back out, if they develop after that, your regulations will require them, at least the one parcel, to connect to that road versus Highway 1, which will eliminate a little bit of contact with Highway 1. We have worked quite a bit with Caltrans, just so you know the extent of what Caltrans is requiring. What they're looking for is from Sheridan Road to the intersection with Willow Road. They're looking for a two-way left turn lane for that entire stretch. That's a requirement on this project. It's the same requirement on the Murphy's property, which is two properties east. That's the property with the big sweeping curve. So we'll be addressing that when we come to hearing. And the Hernandezes have the same condition on their property as well because of their new intersection that they're going to create. Let me address Commissioner Christensen's concerns about parking. We have the room to add a couple more parking spaces. We have two parking spaces now. We're required to add one more for the caretaker, which we don't have. We have room on site to add two more spaces near the caretaker's unit for ancillary use. The other requirement for parking around the county requirements for the car wash is that there's additional parking required with that we don't show. So there's some changes to the car wash we're going to have to make to accommodate the additional parking required with that, so that that can double for a lot of different functions. Regarding the reclaimed water system, we are not experts in that. We searched all over for quite a few different options, and I believe I don't remember the name of the system, but the system we've proposed out at this point, we've received a lot of recommendations from other companies in that business ancillary to water reclamation, saying that that is a very good system. It hasn't been, there hasn't been a finite determination as to what the exact system is yet. You know, we obviously don't want to waste our money, and we don't want to, you know, endanger our project as well. So our goal is to what you get by having a building parallel and parallel landscaping with holes for you to be able to see back. The site is elevated from the street, so you're not looking down on the project, so there's really not the ability for someone on the street to see back into the project. And running some of the other buildings lengthwise allows a little more blue sky to come back towards Highway 1 because it does elevate as it goes up into the back. Other than that, noise. I would like to clarify some noise. I'm not a noise expert, but we did hire Dr. Dubink. We respect his work very highly because he's been very conservative in the past for us, so it ensures that we have success. He recently also purchased quite a bit of new equipment, which on another project, which has not been before you yet, has other considerations to make because his new equipment is much more sensitive. It's much more accurate. And so Dubink has looked at the receiving properties around, and that is the requirement, is what is the noise level coming to the property receiving the noise. And staff is correct in their evaluation of that terminology in the paragraph in that it is not requiring additional mitigation, although the blowers and vacuums that would be associated with that would be behind the building or behind a wall. So that also has not been considered at this point. He did go out and make measurements of actual units being run at different distances and then made assumptions on how often they run based on what he observed and applied that into his calculations. So other than that, if you have any other questions, I'm available.
Well, while you're up, Mr. Bertaccini, if you would just educate us a bit on how the water recycling system will work for the car wash, I would be curious to know.
Other than the basics that I know about, is water is used inside each bay, which goes into a contained system, which goes into a tank system. That has its own filtration unit because there is dirt and debris that's collected and needs to be separated. The siltation, the water is then, you know, recycled through that system, pumped back under pressure so that operators can continue to use the water. At some point, you know, whether it's automatic or a filter scenario, I'm not exactly sure of the finite dealings with, water eventually leaves that system and goes to the sewer. And so once it leaves that system, we will also have a secondary filtration device, whether it be fossil fuel filters, a Vortechnic type of unit, or something that will collect any items that escape the existing system that would include additional silt, oils, grease, anything else, would then be captured into that unit, which has to be maintained on a regular basis before it's discharged to the septic system.
Any other questions? Okay, our first speaker is Michael Wynn, followed by Kirby Gordon.
Good afternoon, Chairman Christie and Commissioners. My name is Mike Wynn. I'm speaking for the Napomo Community Services District. I'm not here today to oppose this project, so the applicant doesn't have to worry too much, but we continue to have very serious concerns about not just this project, but this sort of thing that's going on the Mesa. Let me talk about wastewater treatment first. This received a negative declaration, yet there was no analysis or quantification of what kind of hydrocarbons and other chemicals could be washed off of a car when it's being washed. It's a self-service, but we don't know whether that means you have a wand or whether it's fully automated. If you have a wand, people routinely open up their cars and they wash out the engine, they wash the undercarriage, they do a number of other things that can be done in that way. Fully automated systems, of course, don't allow that. We would like clarification on that. I do understand from staff that you have a county policy that prohibits the release of harmful substances into the aquifer. that is except for salt. We're not dealing with that yet, but we'll have to someday. But I don't see any design standards for the recovery program that deals with the waste that is eliminated. The recovery program is excellent. Car washes are wonderful. We need more of them. By the way, the question, the... yes, sorry. Commissioner Christensen. It's about 7 miles away at Teft and 101. It's the nearest car wash. We need them. They save water. But what happens to what's washed off and retained in a more concentrated form is proposed to go into a septic system. And to be told, this project came here a few months ago, this is yet another expansion. In their will serve, they talk about their service district. There are no district lines. It is not reviewed by LAFCO. There is no permitting or oversight. For those reasons, I urge you to get a handle on mutual water companies in the county. Talk to district council if they have special water council with the litigation I know that you have. Try to find out some way of making sure that this doesn't just keep growing without any restraint at all.
Thank you, Mr. Quinn.
Thank you.
Our next request to speak form is from Kirby Gordon.
Hi, Kirby Gordon, 760 Matty Road, Pismo Beach, California. I'm an attorney. I represent the applicant, but please don't hold that against me, and I am his counsel because I'm also a real estate broker in the South County. I wanted the commissioners to know that we did meet with the representatives of the residents in the area. We did change the car wash from an automated car wash to a WAN system. Because of their input, they thought it would be less noisy. They thought there would be less people using it, be less traffic. So they requested that we change to a WAN system. And the WAN system actually saves the most amount of water. You use 6 gallons in a WAN-type self-serve car wash. And the average that's used when somebody's washing their car at home is 41 gallons. So, as Mr. Wynn pointed out, there's a substantial savings to the community for the use of the WAN-type system. And the closest ones are, that is correct, it's at the gas station there at Teft and Highway 101. The other one would be in Arroyo Grande on Elm Street. So those are the two closest. This is right in the center. So, again, I wanted you to know that one of the reasons why I don't think we have any public opposition to the project is that we were sensitive to the requests of the neighbors, and we did change that from a automated system to a WAN type system. So if you have any other questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Yes, Mr. Gordon, just in response, Mr. Wynn has brought up the suggestion that the WAN systems maybe allow for a little more debris and stuff if people hose out the engine oils and such. So I don't know if that creates some extra issues or those have all been dealt with.
Commissioner White, I'm glad you brought that up, because the other thing that we did is we took the self-serve system and brought it down to the point where you're not going to be able to bring in large RVs or diesel trucks, that this is only a motor vehicle system. Now, that doesn't keep people from hosing off their engine, but I think that we're not after the guy that's going to bring in his big truck and, you know, hose it down after it's been on the road someplace. Yeah, we're not, that's not what we're trying to accomplish here. So we have taken, I think, all the steps that we can to limit that. I mean, I would be not opposed to putting up a sign saying that, you know, hosing off your engine is not, you know, not allowed. Because I don't agree with that. I know that Scott Adams and Kathy, you know, that's not their intent. I can tell you one of the main reasons why the car wash is there is it's a marketing tool to distinguish this project from some of the other storage facilities. And I'll tell you why that, what the marketing idea is. The idea is that those people that have a storage unit there, if they want to come out and wash their car once a month, that we will give them a free car wash for every month that they are renting at the facility. We think that encourages people to not wash their car at home and to wash it at our facility, and it's also a freebie that would distinguish us from the other many storage places. And so that's why we have it in there.
I don't know if this is more a question for you or a question for Mr. Bertaccini, whether you'd be opposed to some added conditioning for inspection. Mr. Wynn has suggested some kind of periodic testing as opposed to just an initial kind of review.
We're all in favor of that.
Okay, so if we added some kind of...
I would have no opposition to that whatsoever.
Okay, thank you.
On that. I think that's important.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Bertaccini, did you have any concluding remarks?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Mike Bertaccini with EDA. Just to clarify on the treatment systems and what happens to them, just plus hazardous materials should they be encountered inside there. Their range of facilities are not just treating and disposing of materials from car washes. The new high-end Vortechnic units can go all the way down to micron levels of removing bacterial debris. In certain areas, and certain plants have that requirement. So they're fairly sophisticated groups. They are not cheap to employ, but that is a growing business out there. So they easily can produce a report on what the status of the materials are as they're when they're doing that. So that is the ability for those companies to provide a report. They need to do that to the owner anyways on an annual basis of what's going on with their system.
So, Mr. Bertaccini, if I'm hearing you right, that's already somehow implicit on an annual requirement?
You can make it a clarified condition to clarify that it's, you know, serviced by a qualified company, and they're not a lot around, but they are growing in numbers because it is becoming a very big item on every big commercial project, shopping centers. The couple that we've just done in Oro Grande both have Vortechnic units, and the only one that can really deal with those things are these companies. They have all the filter-based products. They come out every 3 months, inspect the system, 2 months if it's a small system, 6 months if it's a gigantic system. Their capabilities of systems run all the way from the individual small project of something to this nature to treating municipal volumes of water.
So I'm hearing you say annually. Mr. Wynn, were you thinking on the terms of annually or 6 months annually-ish would serve your needs? So if we put in some kind of condition, serviced and inspected annually by a qualified, what are they called, these companies?
It would be a
filtration specialist?
Well, they're I don't know what you'd call them. I could probably obtain that name and get it to staff, but it's... they are service contractors for, you know, discharge drainage treatment systems.
Okay, so discharge and drainage service contractors would cover it probably. So staff's hearing that and writing.
And I guess I'd ask, I'm assuming that report, a copy would then be sent to somebody like County Environmental or somebody who's qualified to review it. So.
Who could make sense of it.
I'm supportive of that, but point that Mr. Wynn made is that there weren't any design standards for the wastewater elimination, so we could be testing and monitoring, but unless we have some standard in the condition that needs to be met, like we have a standard for 80% of the water to be recycled, maybe we should talk about having some kind of standard for what the actual, you know, discharge water quality should be.
Well, if I'd leave Mr. Wynn to clarify his statement, but I think his intent was that more globally, from the county perspective, you don't have a standard established. I don't believe that there's anybody in this room here today has enough expertise to establish a discharge criteria. I think that's something that the county could take on and develop, you know, through Public Works, Environmental Health, criteria for how many parts per million of certain products. I know the city of San Luis Obispo has certain treatment requirements for if you own a photo. The old days when we had photo labs and we don't have digital cameras, you know, they have silver nitrate discharges, and they have sewer sampling stations and specific requirements, but those have been developed by wastewater treatment experts, not
And this is a question for staff. Would those standards be already built in somewhere to the either the basin plan or the NPDES permit? I mean, should we tie it back to that?
Mr. Knoll is here, too, ready to jump in and save Mr. Marshall.
Madam Chair, members of the commission, I'm John Knoll. I'm your principal environmental specialist. I spoke with Rich Lichtenfels of Environmental Health this morning regarding this issue. They have the expertise to make a determination with regard to the amount of filtering that will be necessary so that groundwater impacts do not occur. And Rich assured me of that. And that was why Ryan added that second part of that condition, that Environmental Health review the system. Because Rich assures me that they can make that determination as to whether or not that part of the treatment system will protect groundwater.
So, if we added a condition that required annual report testing and monitoring by a qualified discharge filtration
right.
specialist, and that information was provided annually to the County Environmental Health Department, then they could make the determination in terms of the standards and whether or not they were being met and any changes that needed to be required.
Yes, they can. And I think that's an excellent way to do it. Prior to the applicant telling us about those companies, I was not aware there were companies out there like that. My suggestion would have been for Environmental Health to try to do these inspections, but I think this sounds like a better way. And I wanted to...
Although it's sort of that self-monitoring thing. I mean, if
well,
one thing sure. before you close all the discussion is one thing County Environmental Health might do is the suggestion is to get with the City of San Luis Obispo's industrial waste inspector. They have a lot of background knowledge, and they do that throughout the City of San Luis. And they've established criteria. You know, they've done the wastewater treatment plant. We did the upgrade when I was still there. That was a $30 million upgrade, and we went through a whole slew of regulations on how to accommodate this throughout the city. And their industrial waste manager, the city does do their own inspections at this time, and but there are companies that can take a sample and submit it to County Environmental Health for testing. And
yeah, that's a good suggestion for the long term.
Okay. I was just going to reiterate that I know, I remember this discussion coming up during the Costco application. I know that their parking lot and gas station is regularly tested, so I know that City of San Luis Obispo does have regulations and standards that they've been using for quite a while. And then I had one other thing, might as well add in right now, which has to do with, nothing to do with this stuff, but has to do with the conditions of approval on starting on page 4-10. And that is number 3 talks about outside lighting, and then number 9 on the next page talks about outside lighting. Are those somehow different, or are they really the same thing?
Actually, we just were redundant there, so we can take out 3 and keep...
yeah, it seemed like 9 was more detailed,
yes,
but they were basically
9.
Talking about exterior lighting.
We can just
okay.
strike 3.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any other questions for staff?
Well, just Mr. Wynn did bring up another good point here about this ongoing issue of the Mutual Water Company expansion. So I would just like to thank him for that comment and chime in that that's a repeated issue we see, that there aren't service boundaries and they're not supposed to be expanding service yet. Here it creeps up on us all, and we just seem to let it keep happening because each incremental increase isn't really that much. And we kind of say, oh, here we are, and this car wash just uses 6 gallons per instead of whatever the other number was, 40 gallons per, so maybe it's a net savings and it's probably all good. I don't know. Maybe it's, I agree maybe with you it's that not good. We're, here I we agree are again. Yeah, I agree with you that it's something that we should probably take a look at long term. But and I do appreciate the comment. But in this situation, isn't the groundwater doing the car wash and the and they're just talking about the residents? They're not doing both. Okay. Yeah. Oh, you're right. Yeah. It's a good distinction. Mm-hmm. I was not making.
The
well served
from
you.
Woodland Park is just for the caretaker unit.
Caretaker
everything else, landscaping
resident.
And the car wash is from on site. Well,
okay, so it's just the caretaker, which is that minimal use. Okay, well, still groundwater. It's still a good they're point, still though. Pumping from a limited yeah, and there's other aquifer, point.
there's other points about cumulative groundwater impact to talk about, but
right.
And the idea of just looking at these wastewater districts or non-districts is important, but they are separate.
Thank you, and it's an important distinction here that there are two issues with the Mutual Water Company and another, you know, poke in the groundwater.
And I think the potential to discuss Mutual Water Company's creation and expansion is coming up on us in the conservation and open space element. There's going to be discussion of Mutual Water Companies there, so that might be our earliest available opportunity to get a handle on the long-term or the long-range planning implications of Mutual Water Companies.
So not having read through all of that yet, you're finding some sections there are already in or that we have the opportunity to incorporate? Or?
I'm recalling our presentation from James Caruso of a few weeks back when he specifically mentioned the Mutual Water Company issue.
Right.
And I had a subsequent conversation with him about it. So I know that the topic is going to be raised, which opens the opportunity for us to take it where we think it needs to go.
Okay, so let's all make notes to selves to make sure we take that opportunity then so we don't lose too many more chances to get a handle on that.
Okay, it's 2:55, and staff and the applicant has a little bit of work to do with respect to our discussion that we're just concluding. So staff, do you think you can do it in 15 minutes, or would you like a little bit longer? You think 15 is a 15?
That'll be fine.
Shall
okay,
we just clarify before we take a break what we want there? Is everyone clear on that?
Yes, we've got it. We just need to double-check with environmental health.
Okay,
on
great.
So
we'll reconvene at 3:11.
Sure.
Yeah. It's on now.
Is it?
Is it on?
Yes, it's on.
Yep.
Can you hear us?
Okay, so I'm not seeing any wild hand motions from our control room. It's all good. Okay, the thumb is up. Okay, Ms. Hofstetter, you want to share with us what you've come up with? Back to environmental health. Do you feel confident that that is what will in fact happen? I just hear the condition saying, you know, you guys need to monitor it at a frequency that environmental health determines.
That's right. That is what we came up with.
But you want the information, right? You don't just want them to monitor it.
Well, we want environmental health to make the determination as to whether the information meets their standards. They're the entity that makes that determination, not the planning department.
Anyway, you can put that language up on the screen. Can we type that in? Is it?
I can. If you give me a minute, I can pull this
up. Because I think what we were really after was giving environmental health the flexibility to determine how often the monitoring needed to take place. But then environmental health, as our public health agency, needs to then review that information that comes in at whatever rate they determine is appropriate so that environmental health can keep an eye on the situation and make any revisions down the line. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, John Nall. That's exactly correct. And I'm thinking that what's missing is the reporting mechanism. That's what you're referring to.
Right.
And so we'll give Ryan a chance to type that in, but I'm thinking that at the end we have a phrase that says that the monitor shall report the results to environmental health.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what you're looking for. And that's all we need.
Would it simplify it, John, just to add, you know, where you have periodic inspections and reports submitted to environmental
yes.
health?
Yeah.
Although
we need
report.
To make sure, we need to specify who it is that's doing the monitoring, and what we're doing with this language is we're saying that environmental health is going to designate that person,
right.
whether it be their own person
mm-hmm.
or whether it be one of these contractors that the applicant's agent was referring to.
And you had mentioned that there will be a fee associated
that's
with that.
That's right.
Do
there
we
will
need
be a
to
fee.
Capture that?
We don't need to capture that in the condition,
okay.
but staff from environmental health wanted me to make sure that the commission was aware that there's a fee for these things, and especially that the applicant was aware that there will be a fee for both
okay.
review of the system and the periodic inspections.
And that's already in our county fee schedule somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that gets us closer, but I'm not sure that still gets us quite where we want to go. So if we added, you know, periodic inspections will be made by qualified inspector and reports submitted to environmental health, don't we need one more step there suggesting that environmental health is going to do is empowered to do something with these reports?
My initial response would be that goes without saying, because if environmental health sees that we are resulting in impacts to groundwater, which is the first part of that condition, then that is a violation. It would be a violation no matter what. But remember how that condition starts out. It says that, the second sentence says that environmental health will ensure that there are no impacts to groundwater quality. So we're playing off of that, and we're saying that, and in order to do that, the system will be inspected to ensure that. Does that help?
Okay, I see, with that tying off of that second added or first added sentence. Okay, as long as everybody agrees that's
And if you're
clear,
not comfortable, we'll keep working at it.
Well, I mean, the clearer the better,
yes.
I guess. So if there's some question and somebody can do better, that'd be great. I can't immediately think of better wording.
Well, that's why I wanted to see it up on the screen,
yeah.
And you can almost see it.
It's in red.
It is in red.
Red on
oh,
white.
Oh, that's very
red
helpful.
Red on white's okay. It's the red on blue or whatever
that's
that we
very
have
helpful
trouble with.
Ellie, if you can you enlarge that screen? Is that the biggest? Okay.
All right. So just good, I think.
I don't know if they could down there.
I don't know.
Yeah, I can't quite see it this way. I actually can't be fine as long as I'm like that. I can't see anything. It looks good. I'm happy with it.
So now you've just added for approval or further correcting. I think that's fine.
Yeah,
then it suggests something comes of it.
Okay.
It's not just out there hanging.
So I kind of lost my concentration during that little break there. Is that the only condition or the only change to the conditions?
We removed
being
condition
proposed?
three.
Oh, we took out three because it was redundant. That's right.
Yes, it was redundant, so I'll do that here. We also have some renumbering. Let's see. There's 231s on here. And then I'll go change the height. Height 218. Got that. Save.
And that was not a condition there. That's just
no,
the staff
that
report.
Just right.
Okay.
That's right.
So the only condition is 1B that we're changing 15 to 18.
Right.
But before we move on, I would just add one more that the applicant did agree to, the no hosing of engine sign. That Mr.
Oh,
Wynn suggested.
Good, yeah, good
that's
call.
Something that the applicants agreed to wouldn't be costly and could prevent a little bit of discharge of ugly stuff.
So then how about under 2, the applicant shall submit revised plans, and then I'll add a E on there. Sign plan. For review, and something like that.
Yeah, I think that works. Okay, so then my list shows elimination of condition number 3, addition, which for redundancy, addition of condition 2E for signage, renumbering conditions 31 and 32, amending condition 21 with respect to water quality and condition 31 with respect to noise, and changing condition 1B from 15 feet to 18 feet,
mm-hmm.
and changing the reference in the findings from Title 22 to 23. I
I think that captures all the changes, and we're ready for a motion.
I will move to adopt the negative declaration in the applicable provisions of CEQA. And number two, approve the development plan DRC 2005-00144 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and conditions listed in Exhibit B as modified and read into the record by staff, reviewed by staff, and just recently reviewed by our Madam Chairman.
Second. It's a tie. Dead heat.
Be well seconded.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner Melskow?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Chairperson Christie?
Yes.
Why don't we all just have the same last name? I could bring my
why don't they just call
us
ABC
in better shape? Before we close up today, I want to revisit something that came up at public comment with respect to the Planning Commission's participation in the board's strategic planning workshop, which is coming up on January the 20th. And in particular, the two items that we've had correspondence with the board on that relate to the Ag Cluster Ordinance and the wireless telecommunications facilities. I would love to represent the commission at that meeting. Unfortunately, my work requires me to be out of town on Tuesday. And so I'd like to suggest that if the vice chair were willing, since you were here for both of those discussions, if you could make it and we could empower you to go, that I think that would be an appropriate representation. If you can make it. I mean, obviously, if you can't, you can't.
But I would like someone to be there. I'm a little hesitant to committing to be there.
Okay.
I would like to be. Does anyone else know that you're going to be at that or planning to attend that? No one else is nodding.
20th, is that the third Tuesday?
20th is, yes. Yeah, not this coming Tuesday, but the following Tuesday.
Yeah, no, I'm committed that
it's
day.
It's inauguration day.
So I would move that our vice chairman.
I suggest that you don't take any action to authorize anybody to go, but if somebody wants to go, they could, because it's not on your agenda. But there's no reason why somebody couldn't go. And
not think you have any good reason.
As one of the commissioners.
Not think you have any good, great reason why it couldn't go.
Well, yeah,
I'll keep that in mind.
Okay, great. It would be terrific if you could make it.
My commitment starts about 2 o'clock. I can come before that, but then I would have to leave.
So we don't know when it's happening.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we can coordinate on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And at the very least, I would, if we all want to consider the request that we contact our appointing supervisors on those issues just in between now and then. I know it's a little awkward maybe for the new commissioners that weren't here for those discussions, but